We're good? Okay. We're going to get started in just a minute. If you would please silence your electronic devices at this time so we are not interrupted. And speaker slips are out in the lobby. You just need to fill one out and bring it over here to Ms. Dotson, and we'll get you in the lineup. Before I call the meeting officially to order, I just want to read a really quick note here. In April 1962, the Kennedys hosted 49 Nobel Prize winners, along with many other prominent scientists, artists, and writers, at a White House dinner. Among the guests were J. Robert Oppenheimer, who was officially welcomed back to Washington, D.C. after a stint in the political wilderness, Linus Pauling, who had picketed the White House that very afternoon, William and Rose Styron, who began a 50-year friendship with the Kennedy family that night, James Baldwin, who would later discuss civil rights with Attorney General Robert Kennedy, Mary Walsh Hemingway, Ernest Hemingway's widow, who sat next to the president and grilled him on his policy in Cuba, John Glenn, who had recently orbited the Earth aboard Friendship 7, and historian Arthur M. Schlesinger, Jr., who argued with Ava Pauling at dinner. Held at the height of the Cold War, the dinner symbolized a time when intellectuals were esteemed, divergent viewpoints could be respectfully discussed at the highest level, and the great minds of an age might all dine together in the rarefied glamour of the People's House. All right, I'm going to call the meeting to order.
President Kennedy at the time said this is the greatest assembly of minds since Thomas Jefferson ate here alone. So,
thank you for that addition. That's a great.
I would also like to add, on a less fortunate note, that it was 55 years ago yesterday that John F. Kennedy was assassinated. And if he had lived, this world would be a much healthier and more loving place.
That is one of the reasons why I picked that quote today.
Thank you.
All right. I call this meeting of the Cambria Community Services District Board to order. And if you would all please rise and join me for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right. We do have a quorum. All five directors are here today. Is there a report from closed session, Mr. Carmel?
Nothing formal, Madam President. We discussed labor negotiations with IAFF, and we discussed the status of the recruitment of the general manager and a potential interim general manager.
Thank you very much for that report. Agenda review, are there any additions or deletions to today's agenda? Seeing none, let's move to public safety, the Sheriff's Department report. Welcome.
Test 1, 2, there we go. Good afternoon, Michael Manuelli, Commander, Sheriff's Coast Station. This month's report is for October from the 1st to 31st. Calls for service for Cambria, 321 calls for service, generating 51 reports. For comparison, Avila Beach had 91, Cayucas had 153, Los Osos 586, and San Simeon 45. Compared to last year, there were 337 reports generating 337 calls for service generating 34 reports. A short breakdown of those were there were 4 assault calls, 28 disturbance calls, resulting in 3 separate reports. We had a subject who has been continually yelling out of their residence. It's an ongoing problem that the sheriff's office has been addressing, and we have filed reports with the DA's office. You had 3 burglary reports in the area. 2 of them resulted in actual documentation. We had tools stolen from a vehicle. They cut padlocks on the back of the vehicle. And we also had a local transient go into a restaurant with the intent to eat free, which is considered a burglary. You had 1 attempted burglary. Someone tried opening a door at one of the local motels while somebody was there inside. 10 thefts report. Of note, I found particular that 2 fountains were stolen from different locations on the same night. Also, wall art was stolen from another location. So I don't know for sure if someone's going through neighborhoods, going through businesses, just driving around at night looking for opportunities. But that was curious when I went through that. Another theft report was a vehicle or a bicycle stolen off of a vehicle. 2 vandalism reports, 8 different type of trespasses, and 1 phone scam where the caller told the person, "I have your father." Thankfully, they knew where the father was, and the father was safe, and they didn't take anything. Although this wasn't in October, this may have generated some questions that just a week ago, a large number of us were here in town, and we were seen leaving town, code 3, lights and sirens on. That was when we were called to Ventura to assist with the evacuations there at the fire. The group that left here continued on to the main station, fueled their vehicles, and responded lights and siren all the way to Ventura, where they assisted with evacuations. And hearing their reports, it was extremely dangerous down there for everybody involved, law enforcement, fire, and the citizens of that community. And we know the devastation that it did do. And that's my report.
Thank you very much, and I appreciate that report on the cars going. There were so many coming from Cambria. So are there any questions?
I'd just like to make a brief comment that I believe the number of people that were evacuated in Southern California was 260,000, which is approximately the population of San Luis Obispo County. And I can just imagine what if the entire population of this county had to be evacuated, how frightening that would be.
Yes, and if I could add to that, our deputies responded down there into the area they went to. The fire came upon them so quickly, estimated wind speeds were 60, 70, 80 miles per hour. The fire was burning the trees and other items on one side and not burning the other side. And in fact, they had to evacuate immediately before they had the order to evacuate. And they probably evacuated themselves, the San Luis Obispo contingency, 20 to 30,000 people, the first 100,000 that were evacuated that night. Very fast moving.
On that happy note, I'm glad that our county was able to help down there. Thank you very much for your report.
Thank you. Have a good week.
Fire department report. Perfect segue. Welcome.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Captain Gibson here. I'm standing in for Chief Hollingsworth as he's committed to an executive fire officer class all week long. So with that, let's see. He did give me some points to go over. So for the month of October, we did have 65 emergency responses. And of that 65, 81% were for local residents, and then 19% were for non-local. So clearly the tourism is doing well in Cambria. Prescribed burning in the Leimert area, which is being funded obviously by the FireSafe grant that was received. There are several personnel and crews that have had a hand in that and continue to work on that. They've been kind of static right now as far as burning, just due to the weather. So we look like we'll have some moisture coming in for the Thanksgiving weekend, and that will provide ideal conditions for us to hopefully continue burning those piles till they're gone. So let's see here. Just some updates on what's going on in the state wildfire season. And some of these numbers aren't current for today, but they're in the ballpark. So for Butte County, that's at 140,000 acres and 40% contained. The Woolsey Fire down in Ventura County is at 98,000 acres and 57% contained. And then for 2018, the death toll, which this number says 56 people, the number keeps going up as they unfortunately are finding more and more people who have passed away up in the Paradise Fire, so which is unfortunate. But to date, over 1.6 million acres have been burned for the 2018 fire season. So pretty devastating this year, and with these drought conditions, it just doesn't seem to let up. So hopefully we can get some moist seasons coming up and better years ahead. So Cambria Fire, we do have our water tender with Engineer Castellanos and Firefighter Salas committed to that. And they've been there since, I think they left Friday. So last Friday they left, and they'll be committed for at least a few more days. Let's see here. So we have a couple of grants here. The Hazard Mitigation Grant, or the Fuel Reduction, that's still pending. The AFG Radio Replacement Grant is also pending, so we haven't heard word on either of those. And then just as a safety message, typically when we do daylight savings or fall back to standard time, that's a good time for us to tell people, hey, when you're changing your clocks, change the batteries in your smoke and carbon monoxide detectors as well. So if you haven't done that, please do so, and we're happy to help. If you need to have us replace your batteries, we're happy to throw that ladder up and do it for people. So what else we got? The Season of Hope, we're collecting toys for tots and food for the food bank, and so we're proud to be participants in that. The station is a drop-off point for that, so if people have toys or food they want to bring and donate, Station 57 on Burton Drive, it's the place to drop it off. That's all I've got for talking points. Any questions for me?
Director?
October, there was a fire safety week or something at the schools.
Yeah, fire prevention week. It's something that's done across the entire United States. And it's a big public education event. We obviously gear it more towards children, and we visit schools and stuff, and we're part of the countywide burn relay. And so we did participate in that and hand out a lot of good informational material for the kids and goodies and stuff that kind of help promote fire safety.
And I had brought this up at least one time before, but is there any way to have an evacuation drill of some kind, or have some more informational for folks so that we can? I know you've had a few town halls to talk about emergencies,
right.
But I don't even know if that kind of thing is doable, but seems like, especially with the routes out of town being narrow and
right, that's an excellent point. Logistically, I don't know the answer to that.
Okay.
I'm sure. I mean, all things are possible, but it's a matter of getting all the cogs in the right place to make that work. So, but I can bring that up to the chief and get that on his radar, and maybe we can get something like that going.
It'd be good to at least look at, Director Pearson.
Yes. Part of the Fire Safe Focus group, what they're doing is they're having Cal Poly run a model of the evacuation for our town. They haven't done it yet, but they're going to do it in the next couple of months. They've got it all set up and everything. They're looking for funding from the county Fire Safe Focus group, okay, and if they get that funding, they'll be moving ahead with that. And that basically they'll run several models of how the traffic will or will not flow, and then they'll come back and they'll be able to give us a full report on that at the focus group, and that we can bring back to the staff and to the board, so that maybe based upon that, we can try to make some decisions on changing our evacuation routes and running a drill or something
sure.
like that. So So that should happen by January or so.
Good. I'm glad to hear it's already underway.
Town hall meetings aren't a bad idea either, and probably should be something done regularly.
Information.
Yeah. And then also with regards to evacuation, another thing that a lot of people forget is sheltering in place, depending on timing and where the fire is, and if you have good defensible space and your home's built of good material, that's an option too. So knowing your options, when to go, when not to go, which would probably be something ideal to address in a town hall meeting. So, yeah, excellent points.
Thank you. Director Barron.
One quick thing. I continue to think that the people that know what the road conditions are here is the garbage company. They pass by every house once a week, and I think the chief has reached out to them, but it's a good idea to have them involved in the conversation because they know where every street is narrow and because they're here every week. So,
good point.
Put them in the loop.
Awesome. Thank you for bringing that up. All right. I think that's it. Anyone else? Okay. Thank you for coming today.
Absolutely.
I think there's a few public comments that are going to address fire issues. So maybe if you could stick around for a minute.
Sure. Absolutely.
Thank you. All right, next item on the agenda is public comment. This is the time to speak to the board on issues that are not listed on today's agenda. The board cannot take action on these items except potentially to direct staff to look into something. You will be limited to 3 minutes, so we will take them in the order they were turned in. So we'll start with Glenda Hoskins, followed by Brenda Gale.
Hello. I'm sorry, I have to bring my computer, but my printer broke. So, can you hear me okay? Okay. I'm not a great public speaker, but I can certainly read. So, hi, my name is Glenda Hoskins. I'm a homeowner in La Mirada Estates. I live on Cambria Pines Road and have been a full-time resident for 8 years. I, along with concerned La Mirada neighbors, attended the Cambria Forest Committee meeting last night, hoping to identify the key decision makers involved in the bundle burn protocol on Cambria Pines Road. First, let me thank Fire Chief Hollingsworth, Cal Fire Forester Alan Peters, and Business Manager for Slow Fire Safe Council Dan Turner, each for their part that they brought in and assisting in the clearing of the invasive French broom and the deadwood on Cambria Pines Road to an action point. It's clearly a first step in decreasing the fire hazard we have all been concerned about for some time. So, respectfully, I would like to let you know that the La Mirada homeowners are deeply concerned about any further burn-in-place action, even if we get rain soon. I think we need to hold an informal town hall-style meeting to have an open conversation about the burn plan and allow the homeowners to get their questions answered and opinions aired prior to any further burn action. There are great suggestions coming forward from many people regarding viable options to burn in place, and they need to be heard. I would like to invite our Cambria Fire Chief Hollingsworth, Cal Fire Forester Alan Peters, and Business Manager Council Dan Turner to attend. We need to move on setting a meeting date as soon as possible to come to an amicable solution to the abatement of these bundles. We all know the fires raging to the north and the south of us are a constant reminder of the seriousness of our situation. Clearly, time is of the essence. Although I prefer to hold this meeting before the end of the month, the Cambria Forest Committee has graciously offered to allow us to use their usual meeting date, date at the Robble Bank on Wednesday, December 12, 6:30 p.m. for this meeting. If there are any suggestions for a date and a place sooner, please let me know. Anything would be considered. We are putting together a list of La Mirada homeowners and any interested Cambrians to allow a full audience. This meeting will hinge on Chief Hollingsworth, Alan Peters, and Dan Turner's attendance. I look forward to any thoughts and involvement.
Thank you for your comments.
Thank you.
Brenda Gale, followed by Carolyn Winfrey.
Good afternoon. My name is Brenda Gale. I'm a homeowner on Buckley Drive in La Mirada. I've been there 22 years. I have many firemen in my family, and there's not a profession that I respect any more than they. They're heroes and keep us safe. My issue right now is what I perceive to be unsafe. The dry stacks along Canberra Pines Road and Catherine Drive look like an accident waiting to happen. I want an informal town hall meeting between Leimert residents and any other Canberra residents with Chief Hollingsworth and Alan Peters, Forest Manager, and Business Manager for Slow Fire Safe Council, Dan Turner. My daughter is up in Chico right now, and it's all like an apocalypse up there. They're breathing totally brown air still. I'm looking forward to meeting with these important gentlemen to solve the problem of the dry stacks in the safest way possible. Something needs to be done fast before tragedy strikes California like it did in Paradise. Leimert is at the north end of Cambria, where the most dangerous winds usually come from the northeast that cause really bad fires. That is where all the homes in Leimert and beyond are located. As homeowners in Leimert, we want to have our voices heard about the safest and most prompt removal of the extremely flammable dry stacks in our neighborhood. We live in the heart of the dry forest. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Carolyn Winfrey, followed by Christine Heinrich.
Hello, I'm Carolyn Winfrey, former Cambria resident, former CCSD employee, currently living in Colorado Springs. There is a distinct difference between management and leadership. The CCSD has been lacking in leadership for quite some time. I urge the board of directors to take their time and conduct a proper, thorough, and open search for a general manager who can lead this community with integrity. We'll work with community members, regulatory agencies, and will also live within Cambria as a fellow ratepayer. The general manager needs to address the long-standing problems plaguing CCSD, including high turnover rate of staff, adequate funds to cover operational costs, debt service, and capital improvements, and rebuilding trust between the community and the district. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Christine Heinrich, followed by Tina Dickinson.
Thank you for letting us speak today. I'd like to speak on the same subject to encourage the board to involve the public in the process of finding a new general manager. Cambria has suffered under two unsatisfactory general managers and concluded with paying them hundreds of thousands of dollars to go away. Let's not do that again. Please include members of the public in this search and invite the public to participate in selecting this individual and in commenting on the contract offered. Cambria has many significant matters to resolve going forward. Let's find the best possible person to fill this important position. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Tina Dickinson, followed by Mike Lyons, which is my last request to speak. If you'd like to speak on public comment, please get a slip in now.
Good afternoon, Board. Tina Dickinson, Cambria. By the way, I noticed for the first time today on a comment slip that I haven't put my name on the slip, President Rice, but I see there that it's optional, actually. So I don't know how you found out that I was missing my name. Maybe you know my writing well by now.
I have to have a name to call is kind of the...
Yeah, that's... But you do have optional. Yeah,
it is interesting. True.
That was just... Okay. So I am wearing black today. I don't ordinarily wear black in respect for all of those people who have lost their lives and for the brave and courageous firefighters who are trying to save more lives. This has become such a devastation in our state, and I've been reading a lot of articles related, especially the LA Times. They have been writing some very fine articles with some different thoughts about how we can go about maybe helping our state to have fewer fires despite drought. And I copied out for each of you board directors, this was yesterday's headlines. I have the full report, but I copied this out, and it's sort of President Trump is blaming, you know, forest management. 60% happens to be federally owned, 30% privately owned. And our governor is saying that, you know, it's very much due to climate change. However, there are others who are chiming in, and very articulate and well-educated people, and are saying that the reality of why wildfires in the state are taking a higher toll is far more complicated than either of those politicians' talking points. The core issue, they say, is that Californians keep building in areas prone to fire and strong wind, and that flames are usually sparked from man-made sources. So here we are in a forest, essentially, that is already way overbuilt. We are in an extremely dangerous situation here. And others have spoken about particular areas, but our whole town. And to think of Paradise, the town of Paradise, having very few evacuation routes. We have fewer, actually, I believe. Please tell me how we can keep growing and take care of those issues. I want to follow up on Carolyn Winfrey's thoughts about a search for a new general manager. I couldn't agree with her more with her comments. Frank D'Amico, a former director, said that he would like, I think he volunteered to be part of a committee, or at least said the members of the community should be part of a committee. I'm learning from people outside of Cambria, not here in Cambria, that maybe there are others, there are people being considered by the board at this time. So I've put in a public records request regarding that. I didn't learn of it from here in our town, but somebody some miles away from here with actually two folks who know something that we apparently don't know. And maybe we have no right to know at this moment, but I think that before you guys all start settling in on something, it would be really fair for the community after what we've been through and what you've been through to let us be a part of that discussion. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Mike Lyons, welcome.
Thank you. Mike Lyons, Cambria. I'm just making a suggestion that maybe in the future you should encourage members of the public to ask questions germane to the fire department representative of the sheriff's department, because I have a question now and the sheriff's department person is gone who can't answer it, but I will still ask the question. I did ask him in the back of the room a few minutes ago if it is true what I read on social media today, that there was a very large force of law enforcement people that showed up immediately at the same time that there was a public protest, a political protest, made either Tuesday or Wednesday of last week. I am curious as to how that was generated. I suppose it was a call from a member of the public. And I'm just wondering, given the Democratic demographics here in town and the several protests I've been in, which were entirely peaceful, whether that kind of a response was overkill. I'm not questioning the motivations of the Sheriff's Department or law enforcement at all, but I am wondering if that much of a force amounts to almost intimidation rather than public safety. So I would ask if we could find out how these kinds of things are generated so that people would be encouraged to show up for public demonstrations in the future. Two other things I'd like to say. I know this is a suggestion around, which has some merit, about appointing or finding an interim general manager. But we've already had two failed general managers, as one of the public has just said. And that would mean the current acting general manager, an internal manager, and then finally a hopefully settled upon general manager. That's too many changes in my opinion. I think the board should seek and to search for a person who would be the permanent general manager next and abandon the idea about someone from the interim. The third thing I'd like to say is I am totally against a citizens committee being in on the selection of the general manager. There is no way with all of the different political views here in this town that you could ever find a citizens committee that would be fair and balanced, and that would be the only way to do it. So I'd rather leave the board, the people we trust, who we have elected, to make this selection, probably using some kind of testing methods or professional screening services, and support the person who you feel is the best. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Can you address the fire concerns about the Littimer piles? Would you mind just following up again? I know you mentioned that you were waiting for it to be less dry.
So we're waiting for ideal weather conditions to burn them. One of that is moisture, and then also we also want to be careful of the wind, because okay. Wind is very dynamic. It's blowing one direction, next minute it blows the other. So we need to make sure we have enough fuel moisture surrounding the burn piles, that there's enough humidity in the air to limit, you know, any potential for unwanted fire growth. So like I said, we do have precipitation. We have forecasted weather that looks like it'll be in our favor to do it over the Thanksgiving weekend. And so my guess is that we will resume the burning of the piles to reduce that extra fire loading. But I will say that even as it sits now, it's safer than it was before. It's collected, it's compacted, it's down on the ground as opposed to being wild overgrowth that has, you know, can just easily climb up into the canopy, and that's what we're most concerned about. So okay. Hopefully that answers some questions. No.
Well, we're still going to, it sounds like the fire department's always been open to doing town halls, we'll have staff work on
and I'll,
moving forward with
I'll get their information and get them in
Thank
connection
you.
With the chief.
Thank you very
yep,
much.
Absolutely.
That's helpful. All right. Next item on the agenda is consent. We do have a request to speak on consent. Is there any items that anybody would like to pull from consent?
No, I have a brief comment, but I'll do that after.
But it doesn't need to be on.
No.
The, okay.
It doesn't need to be pulled.
Okay, so we don't. Okay. So we, the request for public comment is Don Howell on item 4D.
Ah, thank you. This is actually asking for information, and it may not be appropriate for you all to reply, but I thought I'd ask. This is page 63 of your packet. The 5% retention to be withheld from any partial payment request, I'm just a little curious about what that actually is and why. But more importantly, on the second page, 64, Article 2, I've read that about 10 times and I still can't figure it out. So I'd really appreciate an explanation on that article. Thank you. 64 on your packet. Article 2 of the agreement. It looks like you're in a, I think we're in the, you're in the same spot, yeah.
Can you address the, okay, fair enough. Okay, yeah. I think this is actually, before we take this, because of the question and a couple of other things, we're going to take a, 5-minute break. So we'll come back at 2:40. Cambry Community Services District Board of Directors back to order. We did have a question from the public on one of the consent items. Mr. Carmel, can you please?
There was two questions, but one was with regard to the 5% retention. And as you know, it's a standard practice to retain 5% of each payment and to hold it for 35 days after you've accepted the job, just in case any liens are filed. That money then can be utilized to deal with the lien, and it's released after 35 days. And 5% is the most by law that we can retain.
Okay. And the second one?
It was really just a matter of a very convoluted paragraph that's hard to sort of untangle. But I think if you read it slowly and you understand that lawyers are not good writers, and oftentimes these agreements get utilized over and over again without really looking closely at what they say, that really is what we're talking about here. But
I promise Mr. Howell that once he's sitting up there, we'll make sure that those paragraphs are a little more clean.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And that is why we took the break, because I don't want to have the board be approving a contract that has some problem. And I appreciate the detail with which you looked at that, because second page of a contract, my eyes are usually going cross-eyed, and I trust our counsel to give us something that's appropriate.
I'm really trying to beat Dave to the punch, but I move that we could. I move that we approve the consent agenda.
I'd like to make comment on this item as well. Thank you.
Wait. We've got a motion on the floor. Let's see if there's a second, and then we'll go to you.
Thank
is there
you.
A second?
I'll second.
Okay. Director Farmer.
Thank you. The comment I would like to make, and obvious for all of us that drive around in this community, the narrow roads, the dirt roads, or whatever, especially narrow roads, they're not going to be paving dirt roads. But there's potholes galore all over town. And so I'm not questioning the necessity of doing this, but what I am concerned about is that I seem to recall, in fact, it's funny, I wrote this down, and then when I got to the end of today's agenda packet, and there it was on page 130, the last page of the finance manager's report, down right near the bottom, it says, a spending freeze for non-critical needs continues to be in place. And I'm just thinking, well, one could think, well, like I said, anybody that drives around thinks, no, this is a critical need. I just hit one of those potholes. But then again, and it's not like it's a huge expense, considering some of the other expenses we've had, but I'm just stating the fact that we've been under a spending freeze now for about a month and a half. And I'm wondering if this is a necessity at this time until we apparently get our financial house a little more in order.
Can you address that question, please?
I can't say for sure, but I think that a lot of the money has already been expended. And what happens is we do water line repairs, and then we save them up over time until we have enough to hire a contractor to go out and pave over all of them to meet the county specs.
Cool. So that's the main reason for doing this.
Yes.
Is because of that. Is that in there and I didn't read that?
I'm not sure.
Okay. I guess, okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much. Okay, we have a motion by Vice President Berenger and a second by Director Pearson. Let's have a roll call.
Vice President Berenger?
Aye.
Director Pearson?
Aye.
Director Wharton?
Aye.
Director Farmer?
Aye.
President Rice?
Aye. The motion passes 5-0 to pass the consent agenda. Before we go on to regular business, I have a public comment. It's about 3 minutes long, and it's going to be a video that'll play on the screen.
The mountainous lands of California are an important part of the state's natural water infrastructure. The rain and snow that falls on these forested watersheds provide roughly two-thirds of the water we use for our cities and farms. It provides almost all of the water we use to generate hydropower. Nearly a third of the state's water is stored as mountain snowpack that melts during spring and early summer when demands for water are high. These forests, along with their many meadows, slow the passage of water. This acts as a natural filtration process that improves water quality. Forested headwaters create economic benefits for local communities through timber and grazing, and a robust tourist industry that attracts visitors from around the world. But this vital natural infrastructure is under threat. The ongoing drought has reduced the amount of water that comes from these headwaters. Unusually warm temperatures have caused snow droughts, where winter snowpacks are reduced and melt too early. This makes it harder to manage our water supply system, which is designed to capture spring runoff in dams. There's also a growing threat from extreme wildfires.
More than a century of preventing wildfires has left our forests dense, dry, and prone to large fires. In the past, fires occurred frequently enough in forests that they burned at lower intensity. But by preventing fires for so long, we have left many forests densely crowded with trees and shrubs. Our current drought, which is both dry and usually warm, has stressed these forests. Tens of millions of trees have succumbed to disease, and forests are exceptionally dry. And when fires come, they are bigger, hotter, and more difficult to fight.
Fires of increasing frequency and intensity can have many consequences. They threaten public safety, particularly as more people move into wildland areas. Large fires often lead to poor air quality that can affect human health. They can harm water quality and runoff. They can result in long-term economic harm for rural communities. And severe fires, particularly in our drier regions, can lead to permanent loss of forests.
To make our forests more resilient, we need new approaches to forest management. These include reducing forest density by reintroducing and managing fire. In some areas, forests need to be thinned, particularly near rural homes and towns. The biggest challenge will be, how do we fund this work? Today, more than half of the U.S. Forest Service budget goes to fire suppression. This reduces funds that could be used to prevent extreme fires in the first place.
California, in partnership with the U.S. Forest Service and private landowners, needs to embark on an ambitious effort to restore the health of the state's headwater forests. This is becoming more urgent as the climate warms and droughts become more intense. New management methods, new funding sources, and new collaborative approaches are needed to protect and restore this natural infrastructure that all Californians rely on.
Thank you. That's a part of a 13-section report on climate change and addressing climate change in the state put out by the Public Policy Institute of California, which is a nonpartisan policy institute. You can see that online at their website, ppic.org. All right, let's move on. Regular business. Ms. Madrid.
Thank you, Madam President, honorable board members. Let's see, 4A. Sorry, I wasn't quite ready. Here we go. Okay, so we're bringing before you today a request to approve a debt management policy. We did take this to the Finance Committee, and they have vetted it and made some changes to the policy made by Ted Ziegler and Cindy Steidel, who are both here today, and as I understand it, are prepared to talk if you have questions.
All right. Would you like to... start off, Director Pearson, as the chair of the Finance Committee?
Sure. Basically, what we did was we took the policy that Templeton has had on their books for quite a while and handed it off to two very capable people, Mr. Ziegler and Cindy, and basically asked them to revise it to meet our requirements. They did that. We were kind of asked to move along on this very quickly because we need this in order to move forward on some loans and debts that we're about to take on. So I'd like to get this approved. The Finance Committee did vet it, said it was good. Also, as part of our motion to send it to the full board, was that we would... reconsider it and amend it further if we felt it necessary and bring back a final draft in March.
Okay. Vice President Barringer?
No, I just noticed that it's going to be reviewed at least biannually. Biannually, is that twice a year or is that every other year?
Every other year.
Okay, so you're going to bring it back in March anyway, just to validate it?
Yeah, just to validate and make sure that we've got everything covered and stuff. So.
Okay. I have a few questions, and we do have one public comment. I'm going to ask my questions, and then we'll get to the public comment, because this is not the discussion. I just need some clarity here. Do we know, and this could be either for finance manager or the committee members, whoever might have the answer. Do we know this debt management policy, does it meet the requirements of the Senate Bill 1029, which requires special districts to file one of these with the state? Do we know? I know we have to file one every January 31st.
I believe it does, yes.
Okay.
We can check on that, but I believe
okay.
It does.
On page 76 of the packet, it says when debt issuance is determined necessary by whom is that, and does that really matter, whether it says that the board needs to determine it's necessary or the GM needs to determine it's necessary? There's just some kind of slippery places that I'd like more specificity, and that was one of my questions. On the debt service coverage covenants, it says, I'm looking at paragraph D, at the very last sentence, it says, for financial planning purposes, a targeted annual debt service coverage ratio will be greater than or equal to 1.85 on all outstanding debt. Do we know what our current
DSC is? I don't.
Yes, we do. It's 0.8181. And as far as answering your question about the conditions for debt issuance, the third paragraph under the debt management policy does talk about prior to issuance of new debt, the board of directors will review the debt to be financed. If required by law, such review will be a public hearing. This requirement shall not apply to refinancing of existing debt. So
okay.
I think that identifies that the board will review all the debt requests.
Okay. And then I'm looking at page 79 under authority. I'd like to see more specificity in this item, but I don't. Maybe there was something intended that's not here, because it says the board oversight will be accomplished through regular reporting of financial status and review of this policy. Is that the regular? Is that to mean the biennial review? That's
yeah.
when we'll get
that's,
the reports.
That's when we'll
it's like
review
every 2 years.
Policy, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So the oversight will happen every 2 years when we look at this policy.
Yes. Okay. And of course, the audit always goes over all the loans outstanding,
right.
and we get to review all that on an annual basis also.
And last question, in under short-term debt, there's a blank with a dollar sign in the last sentence.
Yeah.
Was that intended so the board could discuss what
yes.
that amount would be?
Yes.
Okay.
And I think our purchasing policy talks about $25,000 as the limit, so I think that might be a starting place for the discussion.
Okay, great. Thank you. Those are my questions. Let's have public comment. Don Howell.
Just very briefly. In reference to short-term debt and long-term debt, there is really no definition as to what is a short-term or a long-term. I think wouldn't it be appropriate to have some period of years or something to indicate that? And the other thing is just a rather nitpicky item A down at the bottom of page 75. It looks like there's a grammar problem. When it appears that a capital project or other expenditures as deemed appropriate by the board is of such magnitude, I think the verb should probably be plural. That's just nitpicking, but it stuck out at me. Let's see. It would be second to last sentence, bottom of the page. Is that right? Or if you read down second sentence after A.
What page is that again, Don?
Oh, I'm sorry, 75?
75, thank you.
It doesn't really alter the meaning, but it did just stick out, and I thought, yeah.
No, when it appears is, I think, is correct.
Well, you have a compound subject, though.
I just remember. I think we can have a long. We can
That's
have
all right. We
a
can
compound
way.
Sentence with a grammar issue.
Yeah,
because there's a few other little things that maybe okay. would get changed when we do the yeah. first review. I don't think it changes the meaning of.
No, it definitely doesn't change the meaning.
Thank
More
you
important
for pointing
was
it
what's
out.
Short
I'm
and long
surprised
term.
I missed it. Thank you. Those are your comments. Okay. Thank you. All right, I'll bring it back to the board for discussion and a motion.
Yeah, I have a few comments to make, if I can,
yes.
or at least
Please, questions. Please, Director
maybe,
Farmer.
Thank you. Maybe questions as well. First, I want to thank Ted Siegler and Cindy Stidell for doing this work. They're a tremendous asset to the Standing Committee, and I also want to mention that since the implementation of standing committees, we're much more informed and been much more effective in addressing the issues of finances and infrastructure with regard to the needs of the district and this community. Things seem to be moving a little bit slower with regard to infrastructure, but this is certainly much improvement over how things have been in the past as to how issues have been discussed more in ad hoc committees, and now having community involved and getting the creativity and the skill set of people in our town to assist us in these very important areas of finance and infrastructure is a real blessing. So thank you. So the comment that I'd like to make here under fiscal impact, right off the bat here, it talks about maintaining a high credit rating and access to credit enhancement and preserving financial flexibility for the CCSD. So I guess the first question I would ask is, what is our credit rating? I guess if what's that place where you just call and you get your credit score? It's probably not that easy for us, is it?
No, I'm not sure what it is.
Maybe municipal finance can help us get that information.
Sure, we could get it for you.
Yeah, and how flexible are the finances of the CCSD? Well, that's what it says here, preserving financial flexibility for the CCSD. We're kind of challenged financially right now. This isn't a criticism or trying to put somebody on the spot or the hot seat. I'm just making an observation in that right now we're not terribly flexible in the state of our finances to pursue the needs, especially of infrastructure.
I agree that we're not that flexible right now, but this is a starting point for us to move toward, as well as some of the other financial policies that are being discussed, like the reserve policy and making sure that we're retaining certain revenue sources and amounts. So we're working on all of that along with the Finance Committee and the Infrastructure Committees.
Okay. I would imagine that for the most part, the only direction now is up, right? So to speak. I just also make one other remark or ask a question, because I'm just curious how, with regard to the long-term debt that we have regarding the emergency water facility, and how this would affect our credit rating or financial flexibility as we move forward.
Are you talking about the debt management policy, or
I'm talking about the fact? I'm talking about the well. What I'm referring to is the fact that we have an outstanding debt of $660,000 a year until the year 2034 to pay off a facility that we've had for 4 years. That I'm not going to describe how things have and haven't gone with that facility, but it just seems like it would be as a hindrance to moving forward. Now, I could be wrong. I don't want to beat up on this particular situation, because I know we've got good people wanting to move forward, including the current chairperson of the Finance Committee, but I'm just wondering, and maybe David, you might even be able to address this, how problematic is having this outstanding yearly debt affecting our ability to be more flexible?
Well, I'm sure it does, but based upon our credit rating and stuff, the flexibility I think we're looking for with the debt management policy that we're trying to pass here is being able to choose whether we do finance something or we pay it for cash. If we can't finance because our credit rating isn't good enough or we are faced with 6% interest or something like that, then we do have to pay for something with cash. And that limits our flexibility a lot because we have to build up that cash reserve before we can then buy a dump truck or anything else at that point. But basically what we're trying to do is get this on the books so that we do have that choice and we can go out and look at loans or we can look at paying something with cash. And I think that's what we're trying to accomplish here.
Agreed. Are you done?
I think that
it might be interesting to see if this policy would have allowed for that loan to be taken out, if it would have had to be overridden, because I think that's one of the things that I want to see in the debt management policy is how do we avoid. There were extenuating circumstances at the time relating to the drought emergency, so a policy like this might have been overridden anyway. But there's some terms that may have been avoided or we may have pushed back a little bit on. And I just would be curious if this policy was in place, would that loan be able to be in line with what our policy is? I just thought of it just now. So I don't know if there is an answer at this moment, but I think that that's what we're trying to do is put something in place so that we can maintain going forward any flexibility that we still have relating to overall debt. Ms. Madrid, did you want to? Okay.
I think all of these things are things that we should be looking into when we are looking to revise and bring back.
Okay.
I'm taking notes, so at the Finance Committee, we will go ahead and look into each one of these and come back to the board at that time and kind of give you a synopsis of what's going on.
Okay, so I think there's two things here I'd like to see that we can get in some way resolved, even if it's to push it down the road a little bit, which is my least favorite preference. One is under the short-term debt, having an amount in there. Mm-hmm. So and you're saying that you think $25,000 is a good amount to put there?
Yeah, I would think so.
Do we have an opinion from staff on that?
Yeah, I think that's a good starting place. We have intention of bringing the purchasing policy to the Finance Committee too, and we'll work to have these two policies work together.
Okay.
And we do have staff who's working on getting purchasing policies from other local agencies and other agencies that aren't so local, and we'll try to come up with a good policy that fits the CCSD.
Okay. Vice President Barrett?
No.
Okay.
I want you to get both of you.
The other one is about the debt service coverage and our current debt service coverage being not greater than or equal to 1.85, which is what it says in the policy. And I don't know how important that is. I don't know if the committee looked at that or not. And again, like I said, it might be something that we can't figure today, but I want to try to have... my goal on any policy is to have what's happening on the ground match what's in writing. So if this is not matching, I don't know how the rest of the board feels about it. But Vice President Barringer.
Okay, I feel fine about the 1.85 situation because that's a goal on what we're going for. I would go so far as to say that we should, I'll make a motion that we approve the policy, but I think with the addition now, rather than waiting 3 months, of $25,000 being the key for, I think that's a good suggestion. I think staff recognizes that. It takes five letters to put down in this policy, and I move that we approve it with that one change.
Mm-hmm.
That's my motion.
Is there a second?
I'll second that.
Motion by Vice President Berenger, seconded by Director Pearson. Is there any further discussion?
I overlooked one more question that I had, or at least issue of clarification on, excuse me, just a moment. On page 77, were conditions for debt refinancing. I'm just curious, what debts would the district be considering to refinance? And I guess why, it's kind of a foolish question, obviously, to be able to use our money more wisely, but what particular debts that we would have would we be most concerned about, you know, refinancing? And how easy would that be?
Well, I think the obvious ones are long-term loans would be the ones we would try to refinance if we could. The current one with the SWF, of course, is so restrictive that it's hard to do that. But I think we've restructured and refinanced other loans in the past in order to get either a lower rate or to extend them further, so it's easier for us to finance those. So I think on an individual basis, we would have to look at different loans. And, you know, again, the goal would be to get the DSR to make that better than it currently is, okay, with refinancing. And I think in 2024, when we can refinance the SWF loan, I think that's the time to go ahead and do that.
Okay, thank you.
But that would be given that the interest rates, I think, are going to be climbing as opposed to going down. If you're a forecaster, that's the direction it's been going. And right now, the interest rate is less now than if we wanted to refinance today. The interest rate would be higher. So in 2024, we can look at
it. If I could just add this, since the year 2000, I'd say, as time moves on, all bets are off the table as to where we're going to be in 1 or 2 years, much less 6 years. And I'm not trying to be a purveyor of doom or anything, but that's just my observation. Thank you.
Well, we do have to be looking at the long term.
No, Harry, you are an astrologer, after all. You've got to help us out a little bit.
Well, you know, the mid-20s, when all of the three major outer planets, Uranus, Neptune, and Pluto, move into much more hopeful and optimistic signs, it looks like things could get better at that time.
Oh, I'm on the board at the wrong time. Director Wharton.
How does this debt management policy, how does that coincide with the general fund reserve policy? Is there one in the works at the Finance Committee?
Yeah, the reserve policy is in the works. At the next Finance Committee meeting, which is on the 29th of November, we are going to review the reserve fund policy again. We've had some good discussions on it, but we're not at the final yet.
Sure.
And I don't know that that's going to be ready for the December meeting or not. That may be January before we bring the reserve policy. But yes, we are working steadily towards getting that done too.
This might come as a surprise to some people, but I've done a little bit of research and work on a skeleton of a general fund reserve policy, a wastewater fund, and an SWF fund. I did have some initial dialogues with Finance Manager Ms. Duffield. I know Ms. Stidell has a copy of what I've been working on, and I would like to bring forth what I've done to the committee, either through, you know, passing it along to you, or if I'm able to attend the meeting.
Yeah, if you can attend, that'd be great.
Yeah.
If you can't, sure, give it to me or
We can discuss it outside of the meeting.
We'll get it
if possible.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think the board would be grateful for the additional input and committee too. All right, we do have a motion on the floor. Is there any further discussion? Then let's have a roll call vote. Their motion was to add in the $25,000 on that blank line and then pass the debt management policy in the packet.
Vice President Berenger?
Aye.
Director Pearson?
Aye.
Director Wharton?
Aye.
Director Farmer?
Aye.
President Rice.
Aye. The motion passes 5-0. Thank you for your work on this, on the Finance Committee. Appreciate Ted and Cindy working on that. All right, item 5B.
Thank you, Madam President. This item is being brought before you. It's a replacement of the dump truck. It's actually to allow us to finance the purchase of the dump truck, which we have purchased it. There was a lot of consideration given to this item. Staff got together and discussed the various options for different equipment that might or might not be sufficient to meet the needs of the department and other departments. So all of our department managers are worked well together and are very interested in sharing equipment so that in the future they'll be thinking about how they can use equipment as a combined unit, or as instead of as a standalone department, they'll be looking at combining funds to be able to purchase equipment that they can use together when appropriate. So in this particular case, we have already used the dump truck to haul off the waste from the evaporation pond, and we've taken several dump loads to the Paso Robles dump. So that was good. They wanted to beat the rain, and so they did. So that's I'll let Bob talk a little more about the dump truck if you'd like to hear more about it, or it also will allow us to purchase a well, I guess we didn't bring the truck forward yet, so never mind.
I have a question.
Director Wharton.
Yeah, when we got the new fire truck, we saw it. Do we get to see the new dump truck?
Sure. You want to ride on it?
I want to make it tilt.
I do have a request to speak from the public. I think we're okay right now on the we might need you, Bob, but Tina Dickerson is my only request to speak on this item. Please come forward.
Thank you, Tina Dickerson. I think this kind of reverts back to the previous agenda item. What I'm not understanding is if the Water Department budget for the current fiscal year includes $76,000 for the purchase of the dump truck, why would we want to spend at the rate of interest rate of 4.25% an additional $10,000 in interest payments if those monies were already allocated in the current fiscal year for the Water Department? Now we're hearing about Water Department and wastewater. So if this dump truck is going to be used by both departments, how do we figure this out right now? Because Ms. Madrid just mentioned that we're looking at equipment that can be used by both departments. So we're looking at the Water Department budget here. Is this piece of equipment going to be used by the Wastewater Department and or the EWS? I'd like an answer to that. I don't understand why we're paying $10,000 in interest if the money was already allocated for this piece of equipment. But I also like to know, and while I'm up here too, I'd like to also know, since Mr. Greshens is here, when is the influence screen going to be installed at the wastewater treatment plant? It's been going on for several months, and it should have been in there initially. And if it was initially, it should have been replaced much sooner than it has been, which it hasn't been yet. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Madrid, can you? That's actually a question that I had to, so because it looks like we're essentially using the new truck, which has already been paid for, was in the budget, that we're paying for it. That we're using it as collateral for about $75,000 loan, which means that we're paying about $9,000 over a five-year period so that we have current cash flow. So is that kind of, because this is actually not a loan for the truck, it's a loan at kind of to get that cash flow back. Is that the case?
It's reimbursement for the loan funds or for the purchase funds, yes. But that's not what I understand was in the budget. What I understand was in the budget, and maybe Pam can help me out here, is it was the first year's payment, although it did denote that it was $76,000, but that was long-term. Because okay. I asked the same question.
Okay. So we don't know. Do we know if $76,000 is in or if it was 16 or something different than 76?
In the fiscal year 18-19 budget, there are two items for this truck, the loan proceeds of $76,000 and the offsetting purchase of $76,000. The first debt service payment will not be made until this time next year. So we would budget the debt service in whatever ratio we decide to split the truck in. If it's not going to be solely used by the water fund, we would budget all that debt service totaling $16,000 within the appropriate funds.
And as usual, the financial language goes right over my head. But I am kind of concerned that we're paying for the cash flow to be in here, especially if we essentially zeroed it out by saying we're going to pay for the full amount by getting the funding. But I know our budget was not, I was not happy with how far we were in the red for some things. So, Director Pearson?
So I think they brought this forward so that we could decide whether we wanted to finance it or not. And I think it's a good idea for two reasons. One, helps our cash flow and helps us do other things in the water department that we need to get done, okay, instead of spending all that $76,000. And as the finance director just said, we can take this and split the payment into different departments. And I can see where the F&R department would be using this dump truck also. So I don't know whether to be one-third, 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 or we do something else, 50% water, or what it would be. But we could come up with those numbers and then distribute that properly through if we did the loan. Whereas if we did the purchase, it would probably be the water department that would pay the full amount of $76,000.
We did discuss a scheme, if you will, for developing a process by which we would charge each department based on an hourly cost, but we'll have to evaluate as we get there.
So having this financing allows us to do this, and not doing the financing wouldn't allow us to split it between the departments. Is that what I'm hearing?
We could Correct. Still credit the water department with whatever rental fees, if you will, from the other departments.
Okay. I don't really particularly care for the idea of spending money to use our money. I mean, I just have never really had a thing for, but I understand if there's a cash flow issue that and we need, and it makes sense to do it. 4% isn't nothing.
With that, I move that we approve Resolution 35-2018 to finance the purchase of a replacement dump truck for the water department.
I'll second.
Moved by Vice President Berenger and seconded by Director Wharton. Is there any further discussion? Okay. I'm glad that we have the equipment we need for our people. I'm still not terribly happy with the fact that we're going to buy our own money. But okay. Let's have a vote, please.
Vice President Berenger?
Aye.
Director Wharton?
Aye.
Director Farmer?
Aye.
Director Pearson?
Aye.
President Rice?
Aye. Motion passes 5-0. Next item on the agenda, 5C.
Madam President, if I could just make a brief comment. I hope that at some point in the very near future, and I realize that water department funds are a bit more solvent than in other departments, but hopefully we can get wastewater, a much-needed Vactor truck. That's a very high priority. That's kind of beyond our scope right now, but I just wanted to throw that in.
Thank you for your comment. Ms. Madrid.
Thank you, Madam President. This is an item for discussion and consideration of a process for declaring stages of the water shortage emergencies, and I would like to turn it over to District Council to be able to give you a better idea.
Madam President, members of the board, you've actually seen this item in various forms over the last few months, and it's providing a direction to, it's discussing and providing direction to staff as to a process to establish water shortage emergency stages 1, 2, and 3. As you know, our Chapter 4.1 5.12 of the Municipal Code contains elaborate provisions addressing this issue. Unfortunately, it's based on a flawed model, so that's actually never been used to declare any of the stages since it's actually been in the code. We use Water Code Section 350, 353, and 378 as the authority to establish these stages. We've done that in 2004, 2007, and 2014. So I think what we're asking here is to discuss how we're going to establish a clear and delineated process with the criteria as well to declare these water shortage emergencies. And it can be done through various ways. I think the staff report recommends an ad hoc be created, maybe solicit some input from the community. You can always get a consultant, but that costs money and probably isn't necessary in this circumstance. Probably shouldn't have mentioned that.
Hasn't stopped us before.
I will say that in reading 4.12 again today, it has a lot of good sort of framework. It's a nice skeleton. And I think if you start with 4.12 and start excising portions of it out, the balance of it really isn't that bad. So that's one approach that can be taken. But at this point, we're just asking you to discuss it and try to figure out how you want to move forward with actually establishing viable process for declaring these emergencies.
Okay, thank you. This is something that has been on my mind since I was on the Water Emergency Alternative Citizens Committee and before, from the Water Master Plan and our various urban water management plans, which have some measures in them. Correct me if I'm wrong, Bob, that some of the how do you address a drought isn't part of the what we have to put in our urban water management plans. I think today what we are trying to get to is having what's on our books match what's happening on the ground. By doing it under the Water Code 350, it could be different every time. A stage two could be this amount of water gets allocated, or it could be just because we do it under Water Code 350 and not an ordinance. So I think by revising this is just my personal thinking on this, and I'd like to hear what the other board members have to say. But I think that by revising the ordinance, it gives a sense of stability that this is what we are going to rely on, and we're not going to just, as an emergency comes up, declare by resolution these are the stages. So there's more consistency over time for how that's done. And there's been so many changes in technology and water usage since the severe drought of 2014 that an update is probably necessary anyway, since the amount per day per person is significantly different. I have some requests to speak. Are there any questions before we go to those requests?
No, I'd like to hear them first.
Okay. All right, we're going to start off with Crosby Swartz, followed by Christine Heinrich.
Good afternoon, Madam President and Board. At the last meeting where we discussed this, I had made a recommendation that we establish a modified San Simeon well level chart and use that as the basis for declaring the Stage 3 emergency. We would have to establish what you might call a danger zone at the lower end of the well levels as you go through the year. And if the well levels are headed below that level, you declare a Stage 3 emergency and presumably start up the SWF. I still think that's a good idea to base this on the actual well levels rather than some climate analysis or whatever, because the well levels show you what's really happening. No question about it. I'd like to elaborate that based on the fact we're expanding this now to the criteria for a stage one or a stage two water shortage emergency. Just as an example, using the statistical well level chart that I distributed at the last meeting, you could say, well, if the well levels go below the 50th percentile level, you declare a stage one emergency. If they go below the 25th percentile level, you declare a stage two. I'm sorry. And if they go below the lower limit, then you declare a stage three. So it all could be handled with a special well level chart that you would establish and publish. So thank you.
Thank you, Christine Heinrich, followed by Tina Dickinson.
Hello. I speak to you today as a director on the board of Green Space, the Cambria Land Trust. This agenda item is a staff recommendation that the board discuss this issue. But back in September and again in October, the Coastal Commission's senior environmental scientist and the Commission's program analyst advised against making any changes in the Stage 3 criteria. They said, because the CCSD's emergency CDP and some of its EIR analyses are based on the current Stage 3 criteria, we recommend you postpone any changes to those criteria until after the follow-up CDP process is complete. Changing the criteria in the midst of the review may slow the permit process and may result in the need to modify the project's EIR, the CCSD's adaptive management plan, the project description that is the basis of the current emergency CDP, or other documents developed as part of the project that rely in part on the existing Stage 3 criteria. Additionally, because the emergency CDP is based on the Stage 3 criteria in place at the time of permit issuance, changing those criteria may put into question the applicability and validity of that emergency CDP for any anticipated facility operations that would take place before the CCSD obtains a final follow-up CDP. It appears, too, that the proposed changes would create inconsistencies, that some of the proposed criteria are arbitrary, and that some are not supported by documentation. These people helpfully point out where and what kind of documentation is needed, and some of the pitfalls of failing to base the criteria on facts. One such risk is the possibility of going from no restrictions to stage three, which is what happened back in 2013 when the board went from considering adding new water connections to a stage three emergency within weeks. We're not sure we understand why the board and staff are proposing to create an ad hoc committee when the Coastal Commission is recommending that the CSD and county complete their review of the CCSD's follow-up coastal development permit for the EWS. It seems that if you would urge the county to complete their review of the emergency water supply, which we have been waiting for since 2014, the criteria will be clearly defined with data, documentation, and analysis by the experts who will review the CDP. Having town hall meetings and creating an ad hoc committee do nothing to resolve these serious issues of water quality, water quantity, stages of emergency, and availability of natural resources. As the Coastal Commission points out, 5 years is too long to wait for oversight of this water project that has already caused environmental harm to the Coastal Creeks and Riparian Corridor. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Tina Dickinson, followed by Dawn Howell.
Tina Dickinson, I did request from the Coastal Commission any communication between the CCSD and Daniel Robinson and Mr. Lester on this issue. I received on October 3rd, actually, before the October 4th meeting, what Christine just read from, the letter that was sent to Mr. Greshens and the board members. You know, 4 years and counting since the facility's been built. 4 years and looking at $9 million of a loan with $4.3 million in interest, double that pretty much, double it to $20 million, I would guess at least, is what we spend, and we have no regular CDP. And yet, you can't. This is a water district that was established in 1976, and here we are in 2018, and we can't figure out the criteria for levels 1, 2, or 3, which
I can assure you in 2013, when the crisis hit after the board was ready to hand out as up to 20 intend to serves on August 22, 2013, not a single one level or two or three was ever declared by this agency until 2 weeks after the governor on January 17th of 2014 on January 30th. That's when there was a declaration of an emergency drought three condition after we'd been through the hell that we had been through. So I would say that if we're at 12 feet right now in the San Simeon Wells at around the at least of what's in the packet here, Santa Rosa's at 54 feet above sea level. You know, why are we, this should have been dealt with, for one thing, a long time ago. This is the job of this utility services district. I don't understand it, and I don't see how you can go against, again, what the Coastal Commission is advising and really warning you about, to go through. You have this, you have your municipal code. You're trying to change that. You never seem to follow what you have or what anybody else tells you. You're trying to always scoot around it, and you always come up with an empty tank of gas. And I, for one, am sick of it. And we have people hired, paid to do their job, and yet it takes, you know, others to try to tell you how to do your job, and you still can't listen. So please, take the Coastal Commission seriously. Work on getting this CDP, but I don't see that this is an emergency of any nature right now. Rain is forecast for around Thanksgiving or just after. The wells, considering we've had very little rain, are in pretty good shape.
Thank you for your comments.
It's very frustrating. Thank you.
Mr. Howell.
Well, I'd like to second. Is this on? Ah, here we are. Yes. Can you hear me? Is that a no? Yeah, I know. There we are. Yeah. To second, I'm in receipt of some of the correspondence that Christine Heinrich mentioned, and so I don't need to mention that. And I think you all probably have also received it. All I have here is, again, a request for information. In the packet, there's references to the water supply and demand model, which is in Appendix D. However, no Appendix D is in the packet, and I looked through the last two agenda packets for the last two board meetings, and there was no other water supply and demand model there. So my question to you is, where can I find that model? Because I think the issue really is between the board and the Coastal Commission, excuse me, is the validity of that model, which staff has raised, is bringing into question. So I think one needs to have that model in front of us so that we can say what is or what isn't valid or what needs to be examined. So if I may know where that model is, I'd sure appreciate it. Yeah, thank you.
Mr. Carmel.
It's in the code, but Bob would do a better job of addressing this issue.
Mr. Gressens, welcome.
Thank you. I was going to say the same thing. It is in our municipal code. It was almost copied verbatim and put in the municipal code, which is online. It's on our CCSU website. It all originated in a 2000 report that was called a Water Supply Availability Report that I think Kenny Jinks Consultants did at the time. So there's another source that has a lot of information on it. Okay.
Thank you. Director Brenner.
If you don't mind, I think this is, my fault that we're looking at this in a way. And let me first address the fact that we did get an email from Daniel Robinson. I have talked to him since. It's clear that there was a misunderstanding from Mr. Robinson and the Coastal Commission. They thought we were going to try and change the criteria under which we declared the emergency in order to have, actually produce the EWS, when in fact we did not use what was in the code. And everyone's right on that. We declared an emergency because we didn't have any water. The water that we had wasn't reliable. That was really the situation. And now we have an EWS, which allows the reliability of our aquifers in the future. I did send an email to him. I copied the entire board on the email that I had sent to him. He acknowledged that. He also has moved on. And since then, I have talked to his Brian O'Neill. And he's aware of the fact, and I've offered to, even after this meeting, I've offered to keep him up to speed on what we're trying to do. What we're trying to do is put something in the code that we can look at, and it's not predictive. Right now we have a model that predicts the weather, and it didn't predict the weather appropriately in the past. And I did actually go back and look at it a couple of times. It actually did predict, was somewhat predictive. But in my email to the Coastal Commission, essentially I outlined three criteria which could be used to show that the reliability of our water supply is affected. One, we look at it each month, and I've brought it up many times, that the WBE well is not to go below 3 feet on the Santa Rosa Creek in order to protect steelhead, in order to protect, let's just say, protect the environment and protect us to ensure that we have an adequate amount of water. So the WBE well is the one that's most important, because that shows that water is continuing to flow to the ocean, and when it starts getting below that, that's a critical area. It probably coincides with well levels also. But the WBE well from our permit is one that's brought out in the license that says if you go below 3 feet, you need to get a dispensation. The San Simeon Aquifer, likewise, we look at the gradient. And like I've explained before, if the gradient between our production well and a measurement well goes negative, meaning that the underlying salt water has an opportunity to move upstream, which is the wrong direction, by the way. When that becomes zero, that would be a trigger that says we no longer have a reliable water supply. Now, it turns out that we can, in fact, use that aquifer, because it's very large, for 3 months. But after 3 months, we have to ask for a special dispensation. That has been in our past permits and will likely be in our license. And the third thing that would affect whether we should go into a stage three would be a catastrophic loss of either aquifer for one reason or another, or storage, or the ability to produce that water. So very three quick things. And we would, yes, immediately go to a stage three. Why? Because we can no longer pump out of Santa Rosa, and that's contributing about a third, a little more than a third of the water we use each year. If we lost the San Simeon Aquifer, or if we needed to continue to pump out of San Simeon, and yet we didn't, it's not so much a well level, we don't want salt water to come and intrude that aquifer. If it does, the consultants that I've talked to say that it might take the better part of a decade to wash out. You have to have a lot of water to wash that out. As we all know, fresh water floats. That's why icebergs are floating in the ocean. And so we need enough fresh water to hold out the salt water, and that's why I recommend a zero gradient. Once in a while, I looked historically, and in a couple of years, it's pretty rare, we get a negative gradient. And, of course, it's an emergency. If we have an earthquake that wipes out some of our storage or something else, yes, we should go directly in it. And that, by the way, isn't an excuse to run the plant. The assumption is the plant is going to run. The plant is going to keep those things from happening. But even if the plant is running and something like that happens, that's when we go into a stage three. That's when we go into different types of restrictions and penalties and so on and so forth. That plant is there to keep us from getting into an emergency, not so much reacting to one. And I think that has received good note. I'm going to try and, on my own, go to Santa Cruz and make sure that I talk to the people at the Coastal Commission to make sure that we're working on the same plane, same page. And as far as I'm not so sure, I would almost move. I'm not going to make a motion yet. I normally do. Is that I'm not sure town halls would be appropriate until we have nailed down something that we're going to bring about, and then have people, you know, the public review what a stage one, stage two, and stage three. I'm just concerned about a stage three. Stage three is when we're in trouble. Please read, I think it's 4.12. Mm-hmm. If you read that ordinance, before you get to a stage anything, there's no washing of cars with an open hose. Everything that the state has adopted has been in our code for decades. So what a stage one and stage two would look like, I don't know. But I do know what a stage three would look like. So I'm interested to hear other people's opinions.
So it sounds like there was communication since that email that was read that clarified some of the confusion that Coastal staff may have had. Because I think that we want to be clear that we're not trying to make an end run around anything. No. What we're trying to do is make something that's solid that we can rely on in future years to say this is the point, which is what the ordinance was intended to do originally.
Right, and if you read the staff report and the staff report previously, it was clear that district council said over and over again that we didn't use anything that was in our code to declare the emergency. We declared the emergency because of the facts on the ground.
Right.
And future emergencies should be outlined as the facts on the ground, what our aquifers are doing.
Right.
And how we're doing it. So that's the key. And so the recommendation of council is if you take a look at 4.12 and use that as a base, but come up with non-predictive, not a model that predicts what the weather's going to be like. I mean, gosh, we're in the wrong, with the changing weather and the changing predictors, I don't think we could rely on them in the past, nor could we rely on them in the future. But we can measure, just like some of our commenter said, we're actually in pretty good shape, and we didn't have that great of a winter last year. We just had one big storm, and we're still doing okay. From our aquifers have responded well. Probably the biggest reason the aquifers has responded as well as they have is that we're only using 70% of what we have used in the past 20 years. So we're just not drawing as much water out of the aquifers as they are.
So, again, something I just said, the previous item, I think, having the way that we're doing things on the ground match what's in writing, especially when it's an ordinance. This discussion today isn't about changing anything about anything yet, because the first thing we need to do is we need to have the people who are the experts in the supply of our water system, and experts that have looked at what our demand is and what our demand is expected to be, because the reality is it's not just about supply, because there will never be infinite supply. So we have to be looking at whether we can meet the demand, and that means that we have to make some predictions, forecasts of what the demand may be going forward, and that's part of what the Urban Water Management Plan looks at. And so I think it's imperative that we have something solid that says here's what these are, and maybe we don't even call them stages. Maybe we do something different, but we have to be able to ramp up the conservation and let people know before we are, unless it is we lose an aquifer. If we lose an aquifer, that is automatic, instant stage three, because it's an instantaneous thing, but a drought is a really slow-moving thing. So being able to cut back at levels that are less than, oh my goodness, we're going to be out of water, is an important part of managing the entire supply and demand. I think the recommendation of having an ad hoc committee to look at what things need to be changed could be useful. I think that would be followed by getting input from the public, because you've been on this board for 8 years, and as all of us have, we've learned a lot about the technical aspects of these things, and so has the public. It's a very smart town. I think having the input from the public is important. We also have to look and trust, we have to look to and trust the people who are running the system, because they are the experts in that part. They have given us such good reports that we've been able to look at it like this, and you've been able to give this explanation today and have the discussions with Daniel and Brian and whoever else that we need to be having those discussions with. I would be the last one to try and do anything that would delay the CDP any further. What I do think we need to do is have something that is reliable in terms of what we're going to look to going forward to determine whether we need to have any stage declared.
Let me say one other thing. The 2008 Water Master Plan has come out, and it had a lot of technical input from great people. Kennedy Jenks, when they first started back in 2001, they had an excellent report that talked about demand. If you look at what Kennedy Jenks and what our SEIR have predicted as far as demand, they both were estimating a lot more demand than we have. And we talked about the 50% quality of life item, and that was reduced. This board reduced that projection to not have a 50% quality of life increase. So those professional advisors have done an excellent job. As it stands, it's extremely conservative. So rather than hiring another engineering firm to come up with more expertise and spending additional money, a peer review of our water master plan. And in 2015, we had that report that we made, Bob? It was the urban water management plan?
That's correct. We had help from Madaus Water Management on some of the modeling for that one.
And if you read that professional report, the board didn't make any conclusions. There weren't any recommendations. It showed that we had, essentially, it showed that we had enough water. Now, if we have that peer-reviewed so that it's just not us talking to each other, us not talking to the county talking to us, maybe we use the county to help that. But if that peer-reviewed proves that we have an adequate water supply as it stands, I think that's the way to save some money and move this project along.
I wasn't suggesting we need to hire additional consultants. What I was suggesting was we need to rely on our staff that already have done these and are familiar with these. I'm not suggesting.
Well, what was said to me by some people is that, yeah, the CCSD says this, CCSD says that, staff says this, but has anybody really said, well, is Kennedy Jenks' assumptions right, or are these assumptions right? So it's a peer review as opposed to Bob. And Bob's a great guy. He does excellent work. But he's relied on consultants, so maybe he's the peer review that we need. Maybe that's all. But I just don't want to see us going into waiting and saying, let's do that next year.
I think it's something we should look at. Yeah. I'm not suggesting paralysis by analysis or anything like that. What I'm suggesting is that we need to have what's on the books match what we're actually doing, and that's an independent thing from the way that we had the resolution to declare the stage 3 under which we built the EWS. So that's two entirely separate things. So I think what we don't need a motion on this item. I think what we need to do is we need to direct staff how we want to move forward. Do we want to have a committee? Do we want to just have have district council go through it with our engineer and look at what those are? I mean, how do we move forward so that what's on the ground and what's in our ordinance?
Yep,
makes sense.
I think I agree with you, President Rice, and especially what you're saying is we want what we would do on the ground to match what the code is.
Like, and, oh my gosh, the well levels are what? And now I go look my book and I see how much what I'm supposed to do instead of just making a decision each time it comes up.
Right, and I think District Council is right that 4.12 is an excellent law that we can begin with. But when it comes into the stages and predictability, and change it from a predictive model to a measurable device, and that District Council and staff, especially with if staff has some help soon, if there's a new person that can listen to work with the District Council to make sure that that law or that ordinance gets is looked at over the next few months, I think that's the direction I would give staff. I don't know what your thoughts are.
I think it's important to have these discussions before we're in a situation where we might have to declare something again. So that's kind of where we are at this point. We're not in an emergency yet. Fortunately, we haven't been in one. We're in a stage two right now, declared by resolution under the code 357. But we need to be getting on to something that actually will provide us a stable place of guidance. I'd like to hear from other directors. The reason we're doing this when it's not an emergency is so we have time to think and we're not in a panic. Other directors? Anybody? Director Farmer.
Thank you. I just do trying to consider Mother Nature as to how she is blessed us in so many ways. And we were very fortunate last year. I think most all of us remember that the rain amount was pretty sparse, and it was, I don't know if the word alarming, but pretty close to that. And then we got that 5 inches of rain in March, like we had the March miracle back in 1991. And we so felt so much more refreshed in more ways than one. The previous year, we had 40 inches of rain in the rain season, which that has a lot to do with why our water reserves are still at the level, well levels are above normal. Of course, a lot of it has to do with the citizens of this community, which have made every effort to conserve, let's say, and made wise use of our water availability. This may seem a little bit funny, but and I don't know, since I don't get a water bill because I live on property where there's another dwelling, so the water bill goes to the landlord. But I might consider sending out a flyer at the end of the year congratulating the community for another year of being one of the most water resourceful communities in the state of California, and just reminding them that no matter what the conditions seem to be, we need to, you know, keep that priority in mind as to how we use water in this community. Also, two people got up in public comment and spoke about the emails that were exchanged between Daniel Robinson and Tom Lester and the board. We all received that. And, of course, I read that, and I was very concerned. And then, Jim, you had the communication with Daniel and seemed to clear up some misunderstanding that took place. So, obviously, what was heard in public comment is out there for public knowledge because it was just explained here. But it's not what you have communicated or what Daniel communicated to you isn't really that well known. So I'm wondering if there's some way, I don't know if you have that email with you, that perhaps you could read it to maybe satisfy the concerns of the people out here in the public with regard to what's happened.
No, I don't. He never wrote anything. I wrote to him, and you've all seen it. I think it's public record. People can see, and I outlined essentially what I said here today. I do. He referred it to his. I do have it. Come to think of it, but he didn't see. He didn't say that. Oh, hey, everything's fine. He's. Hey, why don't you? No, I don't know. I don't even recognize you. I'm sorry. Let's see if I
have. That was a little bit rude, John.
No, it is rude.
And it's nice that we have helpful folks, but we need to keep the order of the meeting, please.
Do I have it?
I don't have it.
Well, if a member of the public says that they have something that will clarify what we're talking about here, perhaps they should be allowed to get up and clarify the situation for us.
You can ask it to inquire.
Who's it from,
Jim?
You want?
Who's it from, Robinson? It's from Robinson. Yeah, he's moving on to another. All he said.
Yeah, I found it.
You found it? Okay.
Thank you, Director Pearson.
Thank you.
Mr. Robinson basically said, thank you for this, Jim. I have forwarded this email to Brian O'Neill, who will be taking over Cambria SLO County matters, and I will be taking another job at the beginning of next month. Brian's supervisors are my supervisors, so you'll be in the same good hands here. Tom Luster, of course, is also keeping tabs on this relation to the larger water supply project. Been great working with you all, and take care, Daniel.
There you go. Okay. Thank you.
And basically, Jim's response to him was basically outlining the steps that he's outlined for us today, so I don't think I need to read that in total. And so this new contact of Brian O'Neill is probably the one that we need to...
Let me expand so that we don't get overly excited here. Brian O'Neill wasn't really aware, I was trying to discuss with him over the phone the response that Daniel had given me, and I wanted to give him an update, and he didn't have it in front of him, and he did in fact look it up and was aware of it now because he hadn't read it yet, and I don't blame him. He's closing out a lot of the work that he's been doing in the past, and now he's starting to take responsibility for this part, and so it's not like he said, hey, thanks a lot yes, I know about it. I made him aware of it, and I promised to keep him up to speed on what transpired today so that we try and keep them in the loop. I tend to think that the Coastal Commission doesn't have a citizen response, a person, a citizen or a board member that is showing them that we want to work with them, not proactively rather than reactively. So that's what I got from him, is that he'd welcome additional information.
And we do also have Erlyn Singewald at the county, who's helping coordinate with Coastal on the permit too. So I don't want to leave him out of the mix.
Not at all. In fact, I have... I'm going to be meeting with Arlen later on this month on another matter.
All right. So what is the board's pleasure? I kind of tend to... I'd like to see this move forward with deliberate and thoughtful steps going forward, which means that we're not rushing headlong into anything. Maybe this is something that we address in terms of whether we create an ad hoc committee for this when we're looking at the committees for the next year.
I think that's good. That's a good idea.
Is that okay?
I would endorse that.
So, and is that acceptable?
I think having an ad hoc committee, and then perhaps after that, a town hall to where we meet with the public, let them know that this is what we're going to be doing, this is why we're doing this, and get input from them and see how all varied folks in the town feel, and let them understand that we're doing this. You know, of course, people are still out there very skeptical as to how the board and district function, and anything we can do to have their public involvement in something as critical as this, I think would be a wise move.
To add on to that, as we've explained before, an ad hoc committee can, in fact, have public involved, just like we do on our finance and infrastructure committees. You can have people join the conversation
and the ad hoc committee, it doesn't have to be a town hall necessarily. Once the committee and the public have given their input on what's going to be written, if you want to have a town hall, fine, that works too. But in the past, anytime somebody said ad hoc, they automatically say, oh, now the public's going to be kept out of it. That's not the case. Ad hoc committees can have public participation.
It's a novel concept. I don't know if it's ever happened before, but thank you.
And just from my experience being on the Water Emergency Alternative Citizens Committee, can we, one, make it a smaller committee name, but two, there is a lot of detail, and a lot of folks in this town are pretty well versed in some of these things, but it did take a while for that committee to even get up to speed where we could have the discussion about what are the alternatives. So that's where an ad hoc committee could be helpful in terms of setting up some recommendations to the full board for a process of how do we do this with the committee, with the town halls, and maybe that's a committee you might be interested in participating with once we get there. My suggestion is we look at that when we look at the committee assignments for next year. Is that acceptable?
I'd absolutely love to be on that committee. Thank you.
So I think it sounds like we have a consensus. Yes?
Can I
move on?
Oh, no.
Yes?
I'm sorry. I just want to make one more comment. No matter how I feel about this facility, the fact that 4 years after it was built, the process of obtaining the coastal development permit still seems to be languishing in the embryonic stages of going through the Planning Commission and the Board of Supervisors before it gets to the Coastal Commission. I mean, it seems like this should be, and since I know that the other members of the board are much more concerned about this than I am, I just am wondering why we're not making every effort to communicate with the powers that be and get that process moving forward. It would make everybody's lives a lot easier. Thank you.
I think we are actually pretty seriously working hard. There's concerns that we're trying to get addressed, and some things take time to do.
I think Bob would attest to the fact that nearly all of the information that the CCSD has provided to the county should be ready to move forward. Maybe you can give us a little bit of a...
The current delay is the ESA consultation with the biologist, isn't
no,
it?
No, but that shouldn't even keep that... Bob can recommend that can go on without... why don't you give us a quick report on
sure.
where we think we stand?
I think the newest thing that happened in the last month or two was the ESHA versus unmapped ESHA. I mean, we have it's kind of a gray area when the Coastal Commission brought up, okay, you're showing the ESHA fine in your SEIR, but we're not sure about what they call unmapped ESHA. So that issue came up.
Excuse me, Bob, not to interrupt, but I think President Rice just kind of asked you to clarify what ESHA is.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry, I didn't hear that. Thank you. Environmentally sensitive habitat areas.
Thank you.
So there are some maps of ESHA, but then there's also a category called unmapped ESHA, where we had a meeting finally with the biologist from the Coastal Commission and our commission biologist, Cindy Cleveland. And so they got together, and we actually had a meeting in the field. About five or six of us were out there. So we walked the site where the Coastal Commission was interested in. I think we are waiting to hear back from the Coastal Commission's biologist on what their opinion is of certain areas. We had some ideas come up about possible mitigation measures that seemed reasonable. And at the last meeting we had with the county, Erlen was nice enough to outline what he'd like to have as far as areas covered in a report that they could then evaluate. So some of this is making sure we follow the right process, and I think that's where the Coastal Commission staff is coming from. They want to be able to show that they have followed the right procedure and process if this gets challenged later on. And so it's moving along. I know it seems kind of slow, it's moving along. We're in the meantime, we're covering a lot of bases. You know, this is just one little item off the side beyond besides operations and everything else we're dealing with. So we've got it moving forward right now. It's with the biologist primarily, and you know, I know Tim and I've had some good discussions on it too. So
Bob, if Erlen said he wanted one, two, or three things, and we're responsible for giving him one, two, and three things, when are we going to give him the one, two, and three things? Because Cindy Cleveland, I know, is going to be carrying on her work well after Erlen's preparing something for the Board of Supervisors. And if he needs whatever he needs, he should get as soon as possible. Because once he has something in hand and he needs confirmation of something down the line, at least he can get it on the schedule for the Board of Supervisors. Actually, he has to go to the Planning Commission and then the Board of Supervisors. And we hope for that. Hopefully that gets done before the summer. And if there's anything standing in our way, if there's a resource that you need, I think this board would put all the resources needed behind you to write whatever you need to write.
I appreciate that. Yeah, I have to get with Cindy again and see where she's at on it. Mm-hmm. I've been giving her information that I know of. As she hits a question mark on something, I know she's working on it. I don't have a specific timeline in front of me right now. But I, without talking to her, I don't want to, you know, say, okay, 2 weeks and then find out. No, it's more like 4 weeks. But I can get back to the board on that.
Mr. Carmel?
I did talk with Cindy last week. And there's another project, if you will, that the county asked us to undertake. That's pretty close to being done. That's a feasibility study. That's mentioned in one of the sections of the code that controls this. That's very new. And what's happening is, and as I think most of you know, some unforeseen projects have been requested from us that take a little bit of time. In this case, it's a biologist who has to do some field work and then integrate it into a report. And she's doing it and probably pretty close to getting it done. But that just came up within the last, say, month and a half. And that's happened periodically. So the delays, a lot of times, are unforeseeable. And I hear this 4 years. It's been in process for 4 years. Remember that our application wasn't complete until we had a certified EIR, which wasn't until June of 2017. So in my mind, it isn't really 4 years. I mean, it has taken 4 years since the thing was built. But that EIR took a long time,
yeah,
cost a lot of money. And until that was done, we really couldn't do anything. So we're reacting to that. But I think we are in a position now where hopefully in the next month or two, we'll have everything we need so that this thing can move through the county process.
Thank you for that additional update. That's helpful. It might be good to have something on the agenda or in the staff reports regarding the progress, even if we don't know a timeline necessarily because it's out of our hands at this point. All we can do is respond to what they're asking for. So we don't necessarily have a timeline, but it'd be good to at least let the community know what's happening. It's difficult without, I mean, Monique's been, Ms. Madrid's been fantastic acting GM, but she wasn't able to focus on this part of what the general manager had been doing before he left. So catching up to speed, I think, and not having the additional resources is difficult.
We'll try to include a small summary in the general manager's report. Monique doesn't have much to do anyway.
Maybe we need a district council report.
So I move that we move on.
I'd like to make one.
Hang on, Mr. Director Farmer.
Thank you. I just want to comment on what District Council just said, that one of the reasons that the process has taken so long is that it took quite a bit of time and millions of dollars to do two environmental impact reports, because the first one is so flawed it was pushed back to us and had to be done again. The issue really is that this project was rushed through in a very brief period of time, when normally you have an environmental impact report done and it is submitted, gets approved, and then you build the project. And so the whole thing has been cattywampus since the beginning, and therefore the problems that exist now. Thank you.
agreed that it went backward. However, the circumstances required the decisions that were made. We're trying to get the corrections done that need to be done so that we can move forward. With that,
I wouldn't tend to agree with that, but thank you so much.
That's why it's good to have diversity on the board, so that we all have a clear view. Director Wharton?
Yeah, I hope that when the ad hoc committee, if it is formed, that Director Behringer or Vice President Behringer and Crosby Swartz with his chart as well, I hope they're both active in such a meeting. I see value in both of that. Maybe there could be a conjoined report.
You guys hear that?
I'm willing to help.
Great. Thank you. That's a great suggestion. Thank you, Director Wharton. All right. Let's move on. Let's move on to item 5D.
Thank you, Madam President. This item is being brought forward to you and is being requested that you discuss, have a discussion regarding amending Section 8.04.100, which is related to the affordable housing program, and provide direction to staff. There's been some various conversations going on that involve changing the code so that it would allow for a different kind or additional low-income housing, such as workforce and moderate. So with that, I'll turn it over to District Council, who can give you a pretty good idea of those items.
Madam President, members of the board, this is a proposal from Director Pearson to expand the district's affordable housing program by adding two additional income categories, affordable income categories, and that would be moderate and workforce. And in doing so, we'll have a program that mirrors the county's program fairly effectively. Right now, our program is limited to lower income only. Lower income is defined as households that earn up to 80% of the median area income. Moderate income is defined as households that earn up to 120% of the median, and workforce 160%. So by adding those categories, we'll have an affordable housing program that is essentially the same as the county's program. The median income is established by the state, and there's a couple of other things you need to consider when you're looking at this, and one of the big ones is we have an incentive in the program now that allows a reduction in sewer and water connection fees of 50%. So you may want to consider, if you go forward with this, if you want to apply that same incentive to moderate and workforce, or if perhaps you want to change the numbers a little bit, maybe say 25% for moderate and 10% for workforce. I'm just throwing out numbers, but that's an issue that you need to consider. One other issue that came up conspicuously in the context of looking at this, and it's come up before, although it was discussed and we found a lot of materials that indicated that this issue was discussed, and that is exempting the affordable housing program from the moratorium established in 2001 under Water Code 350, we can't find anything that exempts this program, although clearly it was intended or it probably wouldn't have been set up. We can't find anything that clearly says that allocations for affordable housing can move forward under the moratorium. So I think that's a box that we're going to have to check by bringing a resolution or something forward that clearly states that the affordable housing program is exempted from the moratorium if you want affordable housing to be developed now. So those are some of the issues that you have to discuss. In the packet are the specific changes that Director Pearson thinks are necessary. What I think we should do is, after we get the direction, prepare an amendment consistent with the direction, and then, because I think we're going to need a little bit more after looking at the whole section, and then I'll work with Director Pearson to make sure that it embodies what he intended and bring that forward. So with that, I'll turn it back to the board.
Thank you. Director Behringer.
I have a question to council. Is the county growth management ordinance, are affordable housing programs exempt from that?
Yes, they are.
Okay, so I think that's where I think we would also conform to to that. And my intent, when I've taken a look at this, I think Director Pearson has done an excellent job of outlining the actual words that need to be changed. I think it's gone a great length. I think we should continue to have a severe or a good discount for connection fees. The reason we aren't building any houses is it just costs so much money for fees and permits and so on and so forth, and we need to get that moving. So I like that particular aspect of this, and more importantly, as I've said in the past and will continue to say, is that we are not in the land use business. So if the county is saying something and the state is saying something, we should not be a barrier. We shouldn't be describing how many square feet a house will be or what kind of materials are used or anything else. We're in the water and sewer business. So anything we can do to make the language, I particularly like the very last comment that was put on the proposal, and that is that if there's any language in the CCSD Municipal Code section that conflicts with the San Luis Obispo County Affordable Housing Standards, the county standards will prevail. And I think that that is really almost all you'd have to say. But so if the county is saying their growth management ordinance isn't restricting us, then we should also say that the issuance of the declaration that we will serve water to such projects, should be allowed outside of our moratorium.
Director Pearson.
Okay, let me give you an understanding of where I'm coming from. This was brought to me basically by the Chamber of Commerce and a lot of the businesses here, especially the hotels, motels, and restaurants are having a hard time hiring people, okay, because they have to travel so far to get here. What we have is we have people that are actually running vans back and forth between Santa Maria and from Paso Robles to bring in labor to man the hotels, motels, and the restaurants. We currently, our current code is restrictive in what we can do for affordable housing. We're restricting it only to the lower income bracket. That's three brackets of affordable housing as described by the council and by the county. So we're restricting the developers in what they can do and what kind of housing they can build and then sell. And by doing so, we basically eliminated that possibility. The only people that can build and they don't make a profit, obviously, are the nonprofits. And we've had, I believe, we've issued... Yeah, People Self-Help has had letters to serve issued to them like 4 or 5 years ago, but they can't come up with the money to build the units. They'd like to build, I think, 16 more units on Schoolhouse Lane, but they can't do it because they don't have the money. When will they get the money? We don't know. So right now we're kind of standing in the way of affordable housing in Cambria. And if you look at the housing that's available for sale today, there's really nothing that falls into the affordable bracket. And if there is something that falls into the affordable bracket, what we've generally seen here is that house is bought and knocked down, and a nicer home is built, or the house is knocked down and the water meter is moved to a more desirable lot, and a house is built there. So I'd really think that it would behoove us to get some more affordable housing built in our community and allow some of these people to come in. Now, who are the people that would be in these affordable housing? Well, Some of the people would be the people that work for the CCSD. The firefighters are eligible under the moderate level, and the wastewater workers and the water department workers, they all fit in that scheme of moderate housing. They're not in the lower income, but they're right in there in that lower than 120% of the median. The median, by the way, is $72,000, I believe, right? Which is, you know, for a family of four is...
I think it's right now it's 83.2 is what the county just had on their most recent report.
Okay.
I know it has increased, so you're probably right.
So still... Okay, people that make less than $100,000 and have a family of four, that's, you know, not a lot. And those are the people that can buy those houses, okay? So it's not just the workers that are in the hotels and motels. It's the people that we hire on a regular basis that might want to live here that can't afford the housing around here, okay? So I'd like to see some changes, unless I'm missing something. If I'm missing something, I'd really love for somebody to speak up and tell me, oh, no, you're missing the fact that, you know, this is going on or that's going on, giving me some more information or something. But right now, the way I look at it and the input that I've gotten from the community is that we really ought to change this and allow some more affordable housing, not just low-income housing, be built. Thank you.
I have a request to speak from Christine Heinrich. There. Okay. Thank you. Thank you for bringing this up. And these are important social issues. However, I'm wondering if I'm in the same meeting that I was in earlier when we were talking about how we can't evacuate the town in the event of fire, and we already have overdeveloped the town. And now we're going to talk about adding more housing in that very congested area. I don't make light of the social problems that are going on that are causing housing to be unaffordable. But I really think that it is ill-advised right now to start adding housing. We also were talking about not having enough water. You know, Cambrians are doing a wonderful job of conserving, but that doesn't mean that because Cambrians conserve, that then we can allow more people to move in. We are already overdeveloped. We have not established any rational evacuation procedures. I just think that this is inappropriate to be even discussing this. Thank you.
Laura Swartz.
Yes, hello, board. This is the first time I'd heard of this, and we try to stay abreast of things. The first thing, if you start building affordable housing, you're basically building in front of the waitlist number people. And I think they might be a little upset if all of a sudden we start putting housing in number one to number whatever has been disregarded. You talk about lawsuits. The other thing is if you're doing this affordable housing, you're doing basically an end run around the build-out reduction plan. How does that figure into this whole thing? Because we're not supposed to be doing any kind of building for the EIR until a build-out reduction plan is in force. So you're doing, you know, the waitlist people are going to be upset. The BR people would be upset. I mean, we spent 21 months discussing this, and you can't just start building and not take that into consideration, in my opinion. And again, for the fire thing, we just saw a thing on the video that said, you know, we're building in the WUI areas, and we're putting more and more houses in forested areas, and that's causing our panics. So putting more people in the forest, cutting out the waitlist people and not addressing the build-out reduction plan at this time. I mean, I have sympathy for people, but again, maybe the employers could have buses. I mean, a lot of people take buses, public transportation, but those three, sorry, those three things that I mentioned, it just seemed that they're not being considered at this time.
Thank you for your comments. Director Berenger.
Just quickly, everybody says, gee, you know, this person that works for the CCSD, they should at least live here. And even though some people are well above the median income, they can't even find places to live. And if you have a low, in order to have a medium income or a workforce project, you have to have low income involved too. So you will guarantee that you're going to have some low income housing in the mix. Right now, we have none, and our action can let us have some. And when I looked at the affordability and I looked at the workers and I looked at the salary schedule, as soon as you start getting above, you know, a water operator, anything above that, John Alchin wouldn't qualify, and a lot of people wouldn't qualify. Let's get some low-income housing in the mix, and I think that this is an opportunity to do so.
This affordable housing is something that I feel really strongly about, especially with the lack of it in this town and in this county. These specific suggested changes are problematic because they may not result in what people seem to be assuming is going to happen, because affordable housing doesn't only mean rental units in high density. It also means single-family residences that are built for under a certain amount. That means, where do we get those people from? Do they come off the list if it's a single-family residence that's going to be owner-occupied? That's an entirely different universe than, say, what's over on Schoolhouse Lane, which is a rental that you have to be income qualified to live in. In this county, and I looked it up. Turns out I actually qualify as being low income, because low income for a single family household is $46,000 a year. For a two-person household, if you're making $89,000 a year, you're considered moderate income. So when you're and a general standard across the country is they consider it you to be housing insecure if you're spending more than 30% of your income on rent and your utilities, which means that if you are in this county and you're the affordable rent levels for this county for one person is $1,400. Find me an apartment for $1,400 in this town anywhere. And that's for the middle income level, which goes up to 120%. So when you're looking at it, the affordable home price for a two-person household for middle income, which is 100 to 125%. I know there's tons of numbers here. I'm sorry, there's no chart, but you're looking at $284,000 is the maximum price for affordable housing. If we want to do this to provide more housing that is at a level, I mean, I seriously, $1,400, that is way more than 30%. And that doesn't include utilities. So that's way more than 30% of what I bring in. So I don't even consider that affordable. And you can't get ahead, just speaking from personal experience, you cannot get ahead if you're paying more than 50% of your income just to rent and utilities. You just can't. It's impossible. Even if you have no credit card debt and no car debt, it's still impossible. You can't live. So I think it's laudable. I think we need to be clear about whether we're talking about high-density housing that will become rental housing, or if we're talking about single owner occupied. That's a different universe. This county has been determined in the California housing package of 2017. This county has to have, for any development over a certain size, it's required that they have to have at least 50% that are available for lower moderate income of any project over a certain size that's going to be built.
in order to get to the streamlining. And there's a new penalty, $10,000 per unit, for a county that denies, for unjustifiable reasons, approval of a new home that is going to be lower moderate income qualified. But lower moderate income qualified is really not that much less than actually building a house that isn't affordable. Because although the housing isn't affordable, what is counted as affordable is still very high. So I would be concerned. I have some of the same concerns expressed by both speakers regarding water use and the level of water use that exists. I definitely think affordable housing needs to be addressed. I don't believe this is the way to do it. This is the way to get us deeper into a problem with other things not getting done. If we change the standards to include the moderate or middle income, I think what you're going to end up having is people on the wait list saying, I'm building an affordable place, and then they'll want to build. And because it's under a certain threshold, that we would not be able to say no because if the county is going to give them a permit, we'd have a hard time saying that we can't fill another five people in town based on how much water we have. So I think we'd be in a jam and leapfrogging over what we need to be doing in terms of getting everything in place. Do we have a huge number of people clamoring to get affordable housing built? People self-help, you said they didn't have the money. It's not because they have to pay our connection fee. They've already paid their connection fee, haven't they? Yeah.
I don't think so.
I think they did, so that if it got changed.
I think you're right, they did, and we gave them the refund already.
Oh, we refunded it?
Half was refunded.
Okay.
Under our code, half is refunded.
Okay.
But I don't think they have the money to build the project at this point. That's what we were most recently told.
But we can't do anything since they've already paid their connection fee. We're not the ones that preventing them from building.
No. I think it's just delayed.
So making these changes doesn't change that.
That one project will go ahead whenever they end up with the money, but they've had these letters to serve for 4 or 5 years now, and they still have done nothing. So
I think we would
could be another 5 years before we get anything built.
And maybe what we need to do is do it as it has to be built by a qualified nonprofit, or it has to be in some way structured so that, because I think what's going to happen if we open up and delete these things about at least a half an acre in size and change the lower, because I mean it doesn't even include very low income, you know, at all in our current.
Very low is included in low income, and extremely low.
Oh yeah, that's right, and extremely low, which is just for anybody who cares to know. Very low income is the annual income for one person is $15,000, which would make affordable rent $404 for a studio, and the affordable home price for a studio at that level is $39. I don't know how you build a house for $39. I think even a tiny house would cost more than that. But I'm just saying that there's more considerations, especially including what do we do with the waitlist people if people are going to come in and do single owner occupied under these thresholds. We could end up with some difficult issues. I'm going to stop there. I'm glad to talk to anybody in the public who wants to talk to me about solutions for this, because I definitely think that it needs to be solved. I don't think this is the threshold that will solve the issue. Director Farmer.
Thank you. It's an unfortunate, you know, to how we've evolved in these times that this seems like the, I love this town. I've lived here 32 years, but somehow the sense of community is slowly being fractured. The fact that fewer and fewer members of the service community can afford to live here is a real bummer. And then I don't even know how else to word it. I feel badly for these people who the restaurant and the motels and the people that clean the houses, they're an important part of what keeps this community going. And there are so many complex issues that have already been discussed to deal with this issue that it's it seems like it's a serious conundrum, and it's too bad. And I have no solution other than this is what the American dream has evolved to. I do want to make one comment. I just want to read some words of Vice President Beringer. It seems like a long time ago at the beginning of this particular discussion, when he said, the reason we aren't building any houses. Now, all I know is I do a lot of walking in this town. I do a lot of driving in this town. And to say that we're not building any houses in this community is not a statement of fact. I see houses being built in this town all the time. And that's all I have to say. Thank you.
I just want to toss this out there. In California, the third most expensive state in the U.S. as of 2013, minimum wage worker must work 129 hours in a week. That's 3.2 jobs to afford a two-bedroom apartment. It's not us. It's not the county, it's not the lack of building, it's the overall economy and the fact that real incomes have not gone up as fast as property values and rents, just flat out. And unless we solve that problem, which is way outside our authority, that it's always going to be a problem here because this is a desirable area to live in, and so the demand is high, and that makes it more expensive, unfortunately, for those of us who are apparently low income. Director Pearson.
All good discussion, all good points. Thank you. I really enjoy the input. I would like to table this and bring it back next month to allow the community to give us some more input and for the staff to do a little bit more research on how we could or could not do what we want to do. Again, to echo Director Beringer, we're being more restrictive than the county is. And the county is the people that are supposed to be, you know, dealing with land use. And so I'm not sure that if a developer really wanted to build a affordable housing type units that they couldn't go to the county and get approval anyway. Okay, I don't know that we would be able to stop them from doing that with our ordinance because the county is going to overrule it. But in any case, I would really like us to look at what we can do to make it a better ordinance that will allow us to have more affordable housing here in Cambria.
I do agree, and the time is right since the housing element goes from 2015 to 2019, and so they'll be updating their levels of affordable housing in the county and their entire housing element for planning purposes. So the time is right for doing this. I just think it needs to be more carefully looked at because if we're looking at the maximum purchase price of $442,000 is eligible for the home program in California for affordable housing. So we need to be clear about what is our purpose for doing this change so that we have the findings under our belt. Because I'll tell you what, the county might give them the go-ahead if we give them a letter of intent to serve and the count, and they move forward through the county process. I can guarantee they're not going to make it through coastal without us having serious findings that say this is why we're doing it this way. And we don't want to give some builder, whether it's high density or not, we don't want to give some builder false hope that they're going to get through a process because we don't have a strong foundation behind why we're making the change. Director Wharton.
I was just curious as to Director Pearson's comment of they could go to the county, we can get overridden. Why would we want to make somebody do that? Why would we want to fly in the face of the county that way? Why not be a partner with the county and have our codes match theirs if they're the ultimate land use? Why not take the chance right now to go ahead and do that? Why are we going to fly our flag in front of the county and say, you tell us what to,
intention was to do that. I think that what we need to do is we need to come up with maybe some compromise in between that allows us to meet what the county is doing, but at the same time, meet the needs of the community at the same scope.
I think.
I'm not sure how we do that, but I think more discussion is needed before we just charge down the road.
Director Barron.
Yes. One thing that's pretty clear is that the value of something is based on supply and demand. Diamonds aren't worth anything except there's a low supply, so people pay more for it. Similarly, in the housing situation, what we have in Cambria is we have people that will demo a house, pay them, they will take a $300,000 home, demo it, and yes, build another house. But it's supply and demand. So we don't have people that are, the community isn't growing, and the value of the homes is artificially high because it's worth something if you can demo it. So if we were to allow people to build more units, the more units would now make the average price go down. And instead of people building large McMansions, as people call it, if we are responsible, if we have social responsibility, we need to allow people to build, especially if they have some incentive to get out from under the taxes on their property to build something that somebody might be able to afford. And so that's kind of the issue at hand. And I see no reason why we wouldn't adopt just the one thing. If our ordinance is not in conformance with the county ordinance prevails. We could do that today. And potentially, even at 50%, instead of $20,000, we'd get $10,000 for a connection fee. And I do understand Director Rice was saying is that, if somebody's going to be owner-occupied on a 50-foot lot, again, that's not what the county's looking at either. The county is looking at people that are developing packages of units. And I don't know whether the county, in fact, maybe district council doesn't know either, but if the county could have somebody put an affordable home on an individual lot owner-occupied, I don't know if that would qualify or not. It'd be something to investigate.
Can you repeat that?
In other words, could somebody say they wanted to build an affordable house for owner occupancy? They're retired, and could they use that to the affordable housing thing? Could that work for them?
These are affordably restricted under agreements for 30 years. So if they met the qualifications, the income qualifications, possibly.
Mm-hmm. Okay, interesting. And we do have a speaker.
It sounds like Director Barringer was almost describing a black market on the meters, an artificially created black market.
I think that you could end up having some issues with that. And because we don't have land use authority, determining having it in ours says that we would give a letter of intent to serve if it meets these affordability criteria, including that it's either high density or owner-occupied or whatever restrictions that we would put, because the thing that would stop them from being able to build something we would prefer that wasn't built in this town, the only thing that we can do is keep them from having a complete application because they can't get a letter of intent. If we put in there very specifically, this is the kind of affordable housing we want to make sure can get through and not just lift the restrictions wholesale, then I think that we can get to where we want to go. But that goes back to what I was saying about what's the full intent of changing the ordinance. So I agree with you that we need to, that it's a good idea to table it and we can come back to it. I do have a request to speak, and only because she got the most votes. Come on, Ms. Stidell. Usually the request to speak should come in before the board discussion, that's all.
I understand.
Welcome.
And I apologize. It was just
No apology needed.
Well, it was a matter of the conversation going in such a very different way. And just a couple of items that I'll just run down through maybe for consideration. The idea of we really can't obstruct the county growth management ordinance. We need to keep that in consideration. What we're talking about with low income is being able to build in multi-family, multi-home zoning. So there isn't just going to be this arbitrary change of single-family residences in properties changing over to multi without all kinds of zoning impacts. So a question is, can you actually... There was a question about being on the water wait list and then converting that into a different type of meter. Can you actually do that? I have no idea, but I would think that there's some kind of limitation. You can't just trade one kind of meter for another. So that's something for consideration. Another one is the address of the impacts to the BRP. What we're talking about here didn't impact the BRP because the BRP was single-family residences. The multifamily, the low-income, sat outside of that, just as commercial did. So that can come off the table. A question of maybe something of interest would be whether the CCSD owns any multi-zone properties. Okay, it does not, and so that answers that question. Okay, good, thank you. So maybe a definition of the applications of meters on the idea of low-income multifamily versus what the single-family residents on the water wait list are, so that we can eliminate that discussion or conversation as being... not being an issue for the overall conversation. And that's it. I just wanted to get a few questions out on the table for consideration.
Thank you for bringing
Thank you for your time.
Do we have a number of how many meters are allotted for?
57.
57? I thought that was a number.
Yeah. 56 affordable have been set aside.
Is that after the people that already have it?
Yes, okay. Those are available.
Okay, those are available still. Okay.
All right, I think we're good to move on as staff. Okay, so
what are we going on to next?
Board member committee and liaison reports. All right, we're going to start with the end, apparently. We're going to start with the president's report. First thing is I went to the San Simeon Community Services District meeting last night. Bruce Gibson was there. I went because Dan Williams recently resigned from their board. He was serving as chair. And they did talk about the Coastal Commission meeting, which I reported on at our last board meeting, and which I think is why Supervisor Gibson was there as well. There's not really anything new. They're continuing to work with Coastal staff, and I made them aware that our board will be taking it up at some point once we've got it. We understand what's happening with all the different staffing changes that have been going on, and with our permit for the CDP being up in the air and at Coastal still trying to work through those issues. I did not, because this board did not authorize it, I did not congratulate Dan on behalf of the board, but I did say on behalf of myself, and I think he served that community well, and it was nice to see him get recognized. I have recognition for two board members that this is their last meeting. unfortunately, with us, at least at sitting at here at the dais. I don't think that either one of them was terribly interested in having a big cake or celebration. But there is, Monique and I just made a little, not even a big one, so you don't have to do much with it, but it just is a certification of appreciation to Jim Beringer with sincere thanks for 8 years of service to our community.
Thank you.
And to Aaron Wharton with sincere thanks for 12 months of service to our community. There's cupcakes, but I didn't bring enough for y'all, so sorry, that's going to have to...
Cut them up?
Okay, yeah, we can do that. Communist. We can share. I don't have any further report from the president, so let's have the infrastructure report.
I'll just give brief, very brief things. If Director Farmer wants to include a few things, a lot of discussion went on about what the committee is going to look like next year, and I think that's going to be the responsibility of the new board. There was some discussion that we have one committee that includes the finance committee and having a infrastructure as a subset of that particular meeting. Whether a director should be actually on the board or just be an ex officio member, I think Don Howell agreed with that potentially being the way that it would support. We decided not to make any recommendations to the board as a whole about renaming the SWF. And we have a meeting at the end of the month on the 28th, the day before the Finance Committee, and the agenda for that is quite brief, and we're just trying to make sure that we have things, if there's anything that, from an infrastructure perspective, that the Finance Committee should be aware of, we'll discuss that and forward it on to you. Director Farmer, if you have anything to add to that?
No, not really, and Vice Chair Dean, as well as Committee Member Howler in the audience, if they'd like to make any further comments.
Yeah, Committee Member Howell, please.
My memory may not be exactly correct, but it seems to me that the Infrastructure Committee did in fact adopt a motion to be passed on to this board. Now, correct me if I'm mistaken. It wasn't really reflected in the minutes either, as I recall. Mm. We did, as I believe it was a motion that was seconded, that we recommended that the committees, well, specifically the Infrastructure Committee, but would presumably apply to the Finance Committee, be extended to seven people, excuse me, seven community members with one board member as an ex officio member. And that was a motion that was passed, and I just wanted to be sure it was brought forward. That is our recommendation.
Okay, I see that in the minutes.
Oh, okay, thank you.
And I tend to concur that having the structure looked at with the two new board members is probably, no offense to Director Wharton or Director Beringer, but going forward, are you on a committee? Do you have anything that you'd like to give some input on? Okay. That's fair.
Maybe just wait until the new board is seated and go forward that way.
Okay. And then I just had one. It looks like also the committee is advising the board that there's no need to make an official recommendation at this time on regarding the naming of the SWF. And then in the minutes it says Mr. Gresham's provided keep track information to the committee, and it says attached, but I don't see that. So.
No, I think that was she meant attached to the minutes, not necessarily.
But this is the minutes, isn't it? I do appreciate these minutes, by the way. The committee minutes being in the board packets is helpful for me.
I think it was attached to the
In the agenda packet. Got it. Thank you. All right. Then Finance Committee report.
We have continued to work on different policies. We worked on the debt policy. We worked on the budget policy, which I believe we'll be able to have finished at the next meeting and brought forth to the full board for their December meeting for that one. We're going to be also working on the reserve funds and on the vehicle policy. We'll open that at the meeting on the 29th. For those of you who have not attended one of those out in the audience, they're very good meetings. We get a lot of public input, a lot of good discussions happen. So Thursday, the 29th, 10 a.m. Here at the Vets Hall. We're also going to have on that agenda an update on two grant programs that we've already applied for to see where the status is on those two grant applications for the district as a whole. There are other grants that the fire department has applied for, but we got the update on those today, so we won't be getting those. But please come and join us on that. Other than that, I don't have anything unless President Rice does.
Oh, it's a great working committee. Then I think we can move on to...
PROS update?
Oh, yeah. Please, PROS update.
They discussed the Cambrians for Aquatics. I'm not sure if that's their exact title, but that's just how I refer to them. I discussed a pool out at Shamel Park, and they were discussing relocating from the school because the district would have to run a sewer line from Main Street into the school grounds, and that was going to cost them about $800,000 to $1 million to install that pipe. So they looked at other locations. They put up a couple of plot plans over a Google Maps for possible locations of either on the opposite side of where the pool is or where the pool currently is, and expanding that and realigning the park. Both look like good plans. I think county's behind both of them. Then Gail Jenkins from the Chamber of Commerce brought forth a plan for bicycles. There's a company, it escapes my name right now. Zagster. And they're going to be placing some hotels, if sponsored, bike racks to be placed around town. They're looking at maybe the next to the skate park as being one of them. And you go in, you pay with your through an app on your smartphone. It gives you a code. It unlocks the bike from the rack, and then you ride it around, and you place it back at whatever rack you feel. And they come in and they do all the servicing on everything. They move bikes around. So if everything's down there in the East Village and we need to bring some to the West Village in Moonstone, this company comes in and takes care of all that. And I think that's going to be a great way for people that maybe don't own bikes in town to get around and see the town in a different way, and for tourists to get around and maybe relieve some of some congestion on the streets when it gets a little heavier. Nope, they're bicycles. Yeah.
Director Farmer.
Thank you. So last night I attended the Forest Committee meeting. Two ladies, Ms. Hoskins and Ms. Gale, spoke at the beginning in public comment about the concern up in the Lamerta area for the bundles of wooded debris that is up there, and they were alarmed that overnight, when some of them were lit on fire and burned, that the next morning they got up and they still saw them smoking, smoldering, and even flickers of flame coming out. So there was some concern over that. So there was probably 10 to 12 people from Lamert who came to the meeting. I'm not going to elaborate on the various comments they made or solutions that they offered. The other thing that happened last night is that there was election of new officers, same people in the same positions, with the chair and the vice chair and the secretary and the treasurer, and they know who they are, so I won't mention their names. They don't have big egos about it. And also, Paul Nugent. Paul Nugent was elected to the board as well. And Rick Hawley is going to be doing a presentation at the January Forest Committee meeting on all things forest. So just to allow you, let you know about that. And with regard to the Friends of the Fiscalini Ranch, they rescheduled their annual, their regular monthly meeting to their annual meeting with regard to goals and objectives, and that's going to be this Saturday, so nothing to report from there. Thank you.
Thank you for those reports. Are there any further? Director Wharton.
If the board will indulge me, I'd like to read what's most likely to be my last statement to the community as a member of the board. This will be quick, I promise. I do speak fast. I'm going to read a statement from Dan Crenshaw, who's a former Navy SEAL and a Republican representative-elect from Texas. I felt his statement was very applicable to our town with just a few modifications. The past few weeks have been unusual for me, to say the least. Campaigning for the CCSD, I was hit by sudden and blinding spotlights. Yet I have no complaints. It was not so bad as the other challenges I faced in life. I'm not here demanding an apology, but this does make the allegations, the false and misleading statements acceptable. It doesn't make those acceptable. I didn't comment on those statements because I didn't want to fan the flames. The situation played itself out, but now what? Does it suddenly mean that both sides will get along and live in utopian harmony? Maybe this election was a tiny step in that direction, but I am not naive. As a community, we still have a lot of work to do. We need to agree on some basic rules for civil discourse. There are some ideas that we will never agree on. Both sides have different ways of approaching the solutions based on contrasting philosophies. Many of the ultimate goals, water security, forest management, fire prevention, growth, and financial health are all the same. We just don't share the same vision on how to achieve them. How, then, do we live together in a world of differing ideas? For starters, let's agree that the ideas alone are fair game. If you think my idea is awful, you should say as much. But there is a difference between attacking an idea and attacking the person behind that idea. Labeling somebody as an ist or as an ism because of that person's policy preference is just a shortcut to playground-style name-calling cloaked in political terminology. It's also a good indication that the attacker doesn't have a solid argument and needs a way to end the discussion before it has even begun. Similarly, people too often attack not just an idea, but the supposed intent behind that idea. That raises the emotional level of the debate, and it might seem like it strengthens the attacker's side, but it's a terrible way to make a point. Assuming the worst about your opponent's intentions has the effect of demonizing their needs, removing the need for the sound counter-reasoning and fact-based argument. It's not a good environment for the exchange of ideas. When all else fails, try asking for forgiveness or granting it. And to those that made statements against me, I forgive those people.
Thank you, Director Wharton. Ms. Madrid, does anybody need a break? Are we okay to keep going? Okay. And future agenda items. Ms. Madrid.
Thank you, Madam President, members of the board. I'll just briefly give you some highlights from the manager's report, and then we can move on to the finance manager's report if you have any questions for her. As we approach the holiday season, I just wanted to remind everybody that we'll be closed for Thanksgiving Day and the Friday following Thanksgiving. Staff now only attends the PROS committee meetings when we're invited, if that's when they need us there. We will be bringing back for the board to discuss the adjusted rates for low-income ratepayers in December. We did also send out a little note on all of our bills that just went out yesterday. Today? It hit the mail today. And so there is a little blurb on there that they can find it on our website, and it is on our website. So let's see. So we also are working on a draft work plan for our CIPs to correlate with the revenue and what projects we think we can get accomplished in the time period, and that'll go before the Finance Committee as we work toward an adjusted budget for to be presented to the board in February. We have made some lab changes, and we're working with the San Luis Obispo County Lab now. We get faster results, and there are some cost savings. We may be able to also have the wastewater labs be taken to the county's lab. They're working on that. Let's see. So the finance manager did speak with Tyler Encode today. And we are exploring a USDA grant application to see if the requirements are within the range of what staff can handle. And we're also working on vehicle decals, inspections, and logbooks. And with that, that's pretty much the highlights of the report. Do you have any questions?
Director Behringer.
I just want to comment that that's a very good report. I read it, and it looks like you're taking a lot of proactive measures, things like stickers and especially lab. You know, why didn't somebody think of going to the county with lab results? I think that the last several months have been, and you've been doing an outstanding job. I just wanted to mention that.
Thank you. Our new SWF CPO, Jim Green, has a really good relationship with the county lab, and he was able to foster that relationship.
Fantastic. Director Farmer.
Yeah, I just want to briefly thank Acting General Manager Madrid for putting on next month's agenda the item regarding adjusting rates for low-income ratepayers. Thank you so much.
Anybody else? Do we have a report from the finance officer?
Thank you. I made a little change in the format. I hope that's acceptable to everyone. So we do not have the expenditure report. I mentioned that last month due to the timing of this meeting, and it also, this month being a billing month, we cannot close out our system to make that data available to us. So in next month's meeting, you'll receive the October expenditures as well as the November expenditures for your review. I did speak to Tyler Technologies this morning and got about an hour and a half overview of what we can begin to expect, a little bit of information on the modules that are included in our software package. It was very helpful for me. I also did pose the question to them about doing another amendment to the contract to push out the date of our first payment. So they are going to explore that within their company. When I talk to the implementation person that will do the general ledger module, she would need to run that through the senior president of the company. So they're going to discuss that over the next few days and get back to me with their decisions. So at this point, we're anticipating we have to make that $30,000 payment December 1st, but we'll see what happens over the next few days. Update on the audit as well, the annual fiscal year audit for 17-18. The auditor will be on site on Tuesday, November 27th to begin the audit. And I'm guessing that would be about a two-week turnaround time for him to be out there in the, you know, doing all of his field work. He'll be out there the Tuesday, the 27th for sure. And then he talked about some time the week of December 1st to do most of his field work. So I'll just keep you updated as, you know, those events unfold.
Okay. Are there questions? Director Farmer.
No, this isn't a question, and it doesn't relate to the finance manager's report. So if anybody else has a comment on that, then I'll speak afterward.
Oh, go ahead.
You know, I was just jokingly commenting earlier when I was stating about the fact that the there were election of new officers for the Forest Committee, and I said, well, they don't have any big egos attached, so I'm not going to mention their names. And I realized when I think about the fact that it's the Forest Committee, one of the beautiful natural resources that make this community, and I think about Crosby Schwartz, the chairperson, Laura Schwartz, the treasurer, they were reelected. Vice Chair Joellen Butler, who's also involved with Friends of the Fiscalini Ranch, and of course Christine Heinrich, the secretary. They're all passionately involved with the Forest Committee because they care about the forest, the natural, like I said, the natural world around us. And I didn't want to demean their efforts every month and what we all wind up discussing. And so I just wanted to mention that. Thank you.
It's also helpful, even if they don't have egos tied in, it's good for the community to know who they should talk to.
Right. Thank you.
All right. Future agenda items. I just want to put on the table that December is the month that we are usually electing officers, and it's usually right at the beginning of the meeting. Bringing this up because it might make more sense to have it be at the end of the meeting, because I'm preparing the December agenda with the vice president, at least right now, until he's out of office, which is the beginning of December. The person who's going to come into the presidency would then be running a meeting. They had no hand in putting the agenda together. We don't have to decide that today, but if any of you has thoughts on that. It was a weird process the first time I was president to run the meeting without having had the more detailed discussions that go on during the agenda prep. But just a thought to put in your brains for next month. I think the rest of the agenda is pretty full already. So, but Director Pearson.
There were several things that we delayed at, like the mm-hmm. August meeting and stuff like that. So if staff would go back and look and see if there were some of those that we said we'd do by the end of the year,
yeah,
and make the president and vice president aware of those.
We have that list too. Okay. Yeah. Good. I've got a list going of those.
And the other one is.
But please send anything that you feel like is really critical. But right. They've been keeping a good handle right. on that.
The other one that I want to bring up is there was some miscommunication between the board and John Ellers about the pocket park. He is actually the one that wants to buy the pocket park, not the Historical Society. You know, and he's the president of the Historical Society, so the communication was probably...
Got it.
His fault as much as anybody's. But in any case... We need to invite John back, I think, and have him in front of us and explain why he wants to buy it and what he wants to do with it, and then we can decide how do we go forward in getting an appraisal or something on that piece of property, I guess, first, right? Yeah, okay. But maybe we can do that in December. Maybe we push that off till January, depending upon time.
Right, so. And I want to... echo that fact. I did hear. I did look in the minutes, and sure enough, it turns out that when it was first brought up, Director Farmer automatically and likely connected the two, the Historical Society and John as an individual. And if it's an offer to purchase, I think that goes into closed session first, and then. He mentioned to me that the package was just returned to him, like, you know, this isn't true, or you know, go to pros or something like that. And I think the most appropriate thing would be to, if it is in fact an offer, that it should go to, it shouldn't be returned to him. If it's him as an individual, we should consider it just as much as we would anybody else. So isn't that correct, that an offer to purchase is something we would negotiate and would go into closed session first?
Normally you would, yeah.
Okay. So that's my suggestion, rather than him make a presentation. And the issue of an appraisal, I think when we first discussed it, an appraisal would cost more than the value of the park. And he mentioned, and I think it's true, that a reasonable offer to a reason, to a willing seller is sometimes can forego an appraisal. We are a public agency, though. We can't have a gift of public funds, so it should be considered in closed session.
I think we have to offer it to public agency first or something.
There are some additional requirements in getting a conformity report as well.
Ms. Madrid?
I did meet with Laurel Stewart, and I did ask her to prepare some sort of a list that outlines what it is that they're really asking and what their priorities are based on. They still are looking at two properties.
They being the Historical Society?
Yes.
Okay.
And the Center Street Park, and they do intend to have infrastructure, water and sewer hookups, which I didn't realize they were going to have that until 2 days ago when I met with her. So they have some interesting options that I think the board will want to consider, but I think I did ask her to go to PROS first. So if you don't want that, I can contact her and just have her give it to us.
I think PROS is the right place.
Just a quick question before we close.
I've got a future agenda real quick. Not that it's new. I want to make sure that this affordable housing program, we're kicking it down the road, but we don't want to kick it off of December, right? So that.
I don't know that we have enough time before the agenda, the December meeting, because that agenda is already really packed, too.
But I think our agreement.
How about we make a motion and then we'll have board majority.
I move that the affordable housing program be discussed in greater detail in December.
Second.
So moved by Vice President Berenger, seconded by Director Pearson. Let's have a roll call vote.
Vice President Berenger.
Aye.
Director Pearson.
Aye.
Director Wharton.
Aye.
Director Farmer.
Aye.
President Rice.
No. That passes 4-1. I'm happy to talk to anybody else after we get done with the meeting about why I voted no. This is a written comment from our last board meeting from Dan Canestro. Did the rest of the board get a copy of this, or am I the only one that has a copy? Everybody, you should. It was in my binder. I just wanted to make sure. He did. And I just want to pass along condolences because Don passed away last week in an accident. So that property lost its main caretaker. So I've got the letter, and I'm glad that everybody has it, but we'll keep it in mind when we're looking at that emergency access, because I think his thoughts were critical. Mm-hmm. Thank you. We are going to adjourn. Is there any comment on closed session? Seeing none, we're going to adjourn to closed session. Thank you for coming. I don't know. Ask Monique.